Let alone an hour for this week, because it's been a crazy, crazy time. So I'll start with why last week's show was deleted. So I was on the road. We had been up visiting with our friends, and I really didn't have time, obviously, to record since I was actually talking with real people in real life, which I don't get to do a lot. So I guess I accidentally put in some recordings, about the joy of Satan that I had covered 2 weeks prior, mixed in with some new stuff. So what I'm trying to do, my stories are going to be all over the place. Hold on. Let me get to my computer crashing. Okay. So my computer crashed. I can't remember what day it was. It was shortly after I got back from the trip. And, you know, it was a long time coming. This poor computer had been dropped on the ground so many damn times. You know, it's hard having a toddler and, like, trying to lug around a computer that's attached to a cord. You know, like, he trips over it, I trip over it. It was dropped so many times. And it fell that one fateful day. And it was actually still working. And until later that day, I had come home from work, and the computer died, and usually I just plug it back in, and, you know, after a few minutes, or sometimes, you know, a half hour if it's really dead, it just resumes right where I was after it had turned off. But no, it didn't do that. It kept beeping at me, so I did some, you know, did some searching on the web, see if I could troubleshoot it. And it's a Mac, so with Macs, you really don't get to access anything unless you have the special secret key that the geniuses all have, and you have to take it like a freaking hour away to the mall where it's crowded and get it. So that really sucked. But luckily, I was able to get a new computer. The only thing is, all of my files are still stuck on that one, so I have scheduled an appointment for this Friday to hopefully transfer over those files. I mean, I have all of my Goyim Goddess parodies. Yes, I know, I'm a piece of crap, and I should have backed this stuff up. I know. I have been looking for my external hard drive for like a year. I'm so frustrated. Like, my house is just, it's not a mess, it's organized chaos, but things like that just, I don't even have the time to think about. I'm like, oh yeah, I was supposed to look for that external hard drive and I never did, and now I'm laying in bed right now and I'm too tired to get up and actually do it because I'm exhausted. So, yes, I have to find the external hard drive. I have two of them. I have two, and they're just lost in the house. So, oh my gosh. I've got to do that. Now that I have a little break, you know, because I'm done with school, and we'll get to that later too, guys. There's just so much I can't even, like, put it. I should have written a list of things to get to. Okay, so that covers the computer crashing. So what I was thinking is, if I'm able to, because the recordings are on my phone, most of them. So if I can salvage the, you know, the stuff about guns and that I was reading, and, you know, some of the other stuff that was more interesting than me just blabbering, I'll probably put that at the end of this show. Now, okay, so yes, I did finish school, graduate school, yay, woohoo, but it's really not over because I have to sit a big examination in order to get like a, you know, a certification. It's another hoop to jump through. And well, there's a deadline, like there is with everything, right? And of course, in Sinead fashion, I'm cutting the deadline dangerously close. But I had everything ready to go. The only thing that I'm waiting on is the proof from the university that I graduated, which they guaranteed me. I mean, I made her guarantee, like, this will be in my email. She said, yes, it'll be in your email by the 22nd. So I have to have this in to the boards by the 31st, and it's what, the 26th today, and I still haven't gotten that email. So I don't know, they're probably all on Christmas break and aren't even going to send it in time, and I'll miss the deadline, and that means that I won't be able to sit the exam in February, and they're only every 4 months. So I'm going to have to continue making my freaking crappy income. You know, the whole point of me going back to school was to boost up my income in a short period of time. It goes like quadruples, you know? But no, because the university didn't do their freaking job. It looks like I'm probably going to have to wait until June now to take the exam. So I'm kind of in limbo here, with deciding what to do about that, or it's not really deciding. It's what they, you know, my fate is in their stupid, incompetent hands at this point. So I am most likely going to be taking a hiatus from doing shows. That might change if I'm not going to be doing the examination at that time, because really I need to study my butt off so I pass this the first time, so I could just be done with all this crap and then, you know, just have my schedule set in place and just have a routine, because I don't really have a routine right now. Life is kind of just all over the place. Like, I don't have a schedule. I just kind of work whenever I can. But yes, I'm most likely going to be taking a hiatus here. Yes, I'm going to be taking a hiatus. I don't want to, like, leave it up in the air. Yes, I need to take a break. I actually, the other day, it all kind of got to me at once. I had a little bit of, like, a panic, not panic attack, but, like, a little midlife crisis, kind of. Like, I was crying. I was really upset. It all started to creep up on me. I guess I try to shut it out, a lot of the things that have happened this year. But for me, I'm actually quite a sensitive person. I might act like I'm all, like, mean sometimes, but I'm really sensitive, and I always try to do the right thing, especially in relationships with, you know, friends or even just online acquaintances, you know, people that I, you know, thought were interested in fighting side by side. And it's just been a real bummer to see a lot of these people just kind of just turn on you over such silly things. And a lot of it has to do with the perception that I'm a feminist and that I'm a bitch. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm always open for feedback, and I think, yes, I can handle myself better in some situations, and I can choose my words differently. And I am actively working on trying to swear less and, you know, trying to attack the propaganda rather than the person. But, I don't feel like people are always willing to do the same. And, you know, it's just kind of, it's sad, but in a way it's kind of growing pains. It's me realizing that, look, you know, you can't just, you know, people have to earn trust, and, you know, friendships, I guess, have to go through tests or whatever to see if people are really your friends. And usually, you know, the ones that are will stick by your side. So, you know, it all just kind of got to me, and there was this one instance where, okay, I felt as if, like, some kind of magic was being used against me in a way, and it was just, it was more like psychological warfare, but it really got in my head because I was having some personal, like, health issues, nothing big, you know, I was able to remedy it myself, but, and I was just in a lot of pain, and I fell asleep, you know, crying one night, actually clutched onto an ice pack on my stomach, because it was the only thing that was, like, helping me. And then I got this weird comment the next day on YouTube, and it said, does this mean that you don't need to, you know, fall asleep crying, clutching onto a hot water bottle anymore? And I just thought, what? That person is freaking, like, spying on me. Or, you know, I mean, I know these Jews, these freaking psychopaths have the ability to, you know, like, tap my phone, my camera, my iPad, anything. I mean, I usually cover that stuff up. They could probably still, like, hear sound through all of our devices, but that just really, it messed with me. It seriously messed with me. And then, you know, it's been a long time of just, they really psychologically screw with, obviously, the perception of the person, but then just the person themselves, you know, like, weird emails. And it's not even always just direct threats. It's like these mind screws where, I don't know, sometimes they're trying to waste your time, but you think that they're a genuinely interested person and you're trying to explain things to them. And then you realize you've wasted, you know, an hour with a troll that's trying to, you know, they have an agenda. But it was just really, really creeping me out. There was also instances where, you know, I would go onto my Twitter and all these people were sending me interracial porn. So, like, it would just, you know, like, anytime I'd look at my notifications, it would just come up and I'd have to see it in order to see my other notifications. And I just, all the crap, you know, just whole entire shows and comment sections about me and Kyle. I reached my limit of BS that I could take for the time being. And I wanted to just walk away from it all and just disappear. I was like, I don't want to be in the spotlight anymore. I don't know. It was like a very, knee-jerk reaction that I just wanted to hide. But then I realized after I did that the trolls are still going to bother me. I'm still going to get all the emails. And then it'll actually be demoralizing if I like give up entirely. But I just didn't want my, I didn't want my face out there. I didn't want people focusing their negative energy on me. I don't know how to explain it, guys. I felt like this whole, like I was under a microscope and I just felt so, like exposed. And I just wanted to go like hide in a cave somewhere and be like, I don't want nobody to talk to me ever again. But there's nowhere to freaking hide. That sucks. It really sucks. Our backs are up against the wall. I'm like, I'm going to go hide out. Yeah, okay, where? Where am I going to go hide? Like, yeah, okay. We don't have anywhere to hide. We got to face this stuff. And what helped is actually going on. One of my Facebook accounts finally got, like, I finally got let back in after over a year, I think. I've been banned from all my accounts. It was a Christmas miracle. The Facebook let me back in. And I had tons and tons of messages that I hadn't seen from the past year, and it was just very encouraging seeing, you know, people, they were saying, you know, thank you, and it was words of encouragement, and I really, really needed that, because it's just so negative most of the time, and so that really cheered me up and gave me a new perspective on things, and sometimes you just need to retreat for a little bit, you know, like, just, I just didn't want people, like, talking about me and like, I'm gonna make a video about it. It's just, ew. It's just so annoying. But yeah, I'm obviously still doing the Pizzagate documentary. I just, like I said, I need to take a break from doing shows if I'm gonna be studying for this exam and doing the documentary at the same time and working, being a mom. Most importantly, being a mom comes number one, comes first, is number one. So, I don't know, I've talked to, you know, Joyster about maybe, like, rotating with other ladies. We have a ladies group on Facebook. So once I get back into some semblance of a routine, because now, you know, my schedule's changed drastically, then maybe I'll be able to, like, think that. And then I was thinking, okay, maybe Wednesday would work better, because I'm going to be doing a self-defense course, and I think I scheduled that for Tuesday nights. I'm really pumped about that. That's something else, too. I want to focus more on training with my firearm, on self-defense, on getting, like, as fit as possible, because I want to be at my peak performance just to exist, because, like, we are entering a war, and a lot of people are just sitting ducks. Actually, that book, I wish I had it in front of me, it talks about the different colors of, you know, like, readiness, and white, I believe it's white, is where everyone's just so relaxed, and, oh, there's nothing bad gonna happen, and you really should only be in the white zone when you're in your house, and your doors are locked, and you have, like, a security system, and you know that it would take, you know, multiple steps for someone to get to you, and by the time they could get to you, you would have a gun in their face. So that's the only time you should be in white. And most people are just, they're literally walking through the ghetto like, oh, I'm going to go take a nap over here. Well, I can't say maybe that's stretching it a bit, because most people know that the ghetto, you should just avoid that. I mean, even the ones that pretend that, oh no, the ghetto's fine, they know they would never be caught dead there. But, you know, people just in their little gated communities thinking that the security guard that's not even armed at the gate is what stands between them and, you know, criminals. Like, that's actually really going to stop anything. I mean, they can jump. I'm looking at one of these gated communities right now. It's like they can jump over that little hedge with the nice little manicured bush. They could easily jump over that. There's no spikes on your gate, you know. You guys are all on top of each other, but what good is that going to do when none of you have guns? What are you going to go, like, yell and ooga booga, like, scare the criminals away? Go away, boo! Like, 50 people? I mean, maybe if you had pitchforks or something, they might run, but, you know, Yeah. A lot of people are sitting ducks and they don't want to face the fact that they have to like really get ready to prepare. And I encourage all ladies out there listening to not wait to buy a gun or to learn how to, you know, use a gun. Don't ever think, you know, it's not going to happen to me. You know, it's not that bad. And this is, you know, advice for myself too, because sometimes I'll forget to bring my gun or, you know, yeah, I'll forget to bring it. I'm like, what good is having a freaking gun if it's not even with me to protect me? Like, oh, that's great. Yeah, I have a gun. It's at home though. And it's not even loaded. So yeah, that's cool. No, it's not cool. It is not cool one bit, and it defeats the purpose of having a gun to protect yourself. So that's it for this little section of the show. And it's not like a farewell show. It's just like a, I'll be back in a bit, gotta focus on some stuff show, because Sinead only has so much energy that can go around and it needs to be really focused into this Pizzagate documentary. I am determined and I'm really pissed because, you know, at this point I don't have any of my files from my old computer, and I had made a good amount of progress on the beginning of that documentary. Kyle's been writing the script, and, you know, I was getting all the clips in place, I was organizing, I got all the stock music, and then the computer crashed. But luckily I was able to grab some of the stock music off of the actual website today, because it's like a membership website, so you can just download it again, there's no limit. And then I redid my voiceover to an actual good one on a good microphone, because I had just done it on my phone really quickly, so I don't know, maybe it happened for the best. I can redo everything. But yeah, I need to get those files back because I can't lose all my parodies. All my parodies and all our sketch comedies, our Pokemon Goy. all those. Damn. Yeah, we got to do some more of those too when we have time. Those are fun. We were actually thinking that this was Drew that gave us the idea of doing like a spoof for, instead of Patreon, it would be Hatreon. It'd be like for, you know, pro-white people. You know, come to Hatreon where we allow you to tell the truth. And, you know, it'd just be funny. And then you could have Kickstarter instead of Kickstarter. So, yeah. Stay tuned. We're going to have more sketch comedy coming soon. So hopefully all of you had a happy Yule, Christmas, or whatever you want to call it, solstice. It was actually really nice for my family this year. If you've been listening to the show and you listen to my family drama reports, you'll know that my American family, my dad's side, has, you know, totally cut off all relationship with us, because I did not want to bring my son around my lesbian cousin and her new lesbian girlfriend that she has like every other week, and whatever fags and other kind of people she was going to bring to our events. I did not want my son around them. And, you know, for all that love and tolerance that they all seem to talk about all the time, it just seemed to disappear when one of their own family members disagreed with what my cousin calls a lifestyle choice, which, you know, is very interesting. If she was apparently born that way, as Lady Gay says, then I guess it's not a lifestyle choice then. I guess you're just born disgusting. But I digress. So it was nice to just be with my parents and Kyle and our son, and it was nice and low-key, and since we live in Florida, it was hot. It was in the 80s, I think, that day, so we got to spend some time in the pool, which honestly, it was fine. I don't mind the pool over being stuck inside all day or, you know, having to bundle up to go out. It was pretty nice, although I do wish we had a bit more of a winter, and we used to. We used to have really nice, you know, crisp winters. And it just doesn't seem to happen this year. My cruciferous vegetables and my lettuces are just, you know, they're just freaking out. Like, why? Why can't it be colder? We can't grow under these conditions. So that sucks. But at least we can still grow during this time of year. And we'll probably be replanting in February already. So, you know, it could be worse. The summers, you can't really grow too much here. besides melons and that kind of thing. Honeydew, maybe. I don't know. But, yeah, it was pretty nice. I know a lot of people either dread Christmases or they look forward to them. I hope that if you're one of those people that dreads seeing your family, that you know, just never compromise your values to be part of the family cult. You know, a lot of times it is like a little family cult, and if you go against it, you know, you're ostracized, clearly, in this case. I just didn't understand why they had to bring my parents into it, because my parents remained neutral. You know, they were like, we don't care about her lifestyle choice, but we're going to be spending Christmas with them because, you know. And I guess apparently that's grounds for writing off my parents as well. So instead of this being an issue between me and my cousin, oh no, we had to cut off all, like, you know, communication. They did to my parents, so that's cool, totally logical, and awesome. So enough about that. So kind of interesting. Someone had tweeted this out. It was a picture from Lauren Southern's Instagram, and it was a meme that had her, one of her little hedgehogs or whatever the hell they're called. So cool. You don't need children to have hedgehogs. That's fashy. Well, I guess she's not fashy. She's just like, well, she's openly communist, and that's what I'm getting to. Okay. So she has a picture of her little hedgehog and what appears to be, like, you know, well, it is. It's a cartoon version of her, and they're both, like, in front of a little communist flag. And she says something along the lines of, oh, this is just so cute. And then she has a picture of her and her fake bleach blonde hair standing in front of a Winston Churchill statue, smiling all big. Like, he's great. Winston Churchill was a hero. So, I mean, do you guys need any more proof? Yeah, she came out with a book recently about how Islam and baby boomers and immigrants ruined, they totally screwed her generation. It totally wasn't the Jews. Okay, I'm sorry. I don't know what I was saying before because I stopped the recording. My son needed my attention, but there's this guy behind me who you can barely see his little Puerto Rican head, like, over the steering wheel, and he's wearing little glasses, and the license plate says Rican. Oh my gosh, you guys, this is just ridiculous. All I see is, like, the little gelled spikes of the hair and, like, little eyes and little glasses. I think I'm probably taller than this little Rican. Okay, sorry. Got a little distracted. That was really funny. And my favorite fag ever, Dickie Spencer, has been getting so much press, and I'm starting to see that it's taking a toll on him, you guys. Yeah, apparently Andrew Anglin is going to be holding an armed march. Totally trustworthy. I don't think that's a honeypot at all. No, it's going to be great. I wonder if Anglin himself is going to be there, so everyone can go see the greatest man ever and ask him for dating advice and, you know, which gun to buy. But yeah, I mean, instead of going after AIPAC, you know, high level Jews, you know, they're going to go after these, like, annoying Jews in the town. I mean, I don't know, whatever. If it wasn't Anglin doing it, it wouldn't be so sketchy. Maybe Tila Tequila will be there. It'll be really awesome. And apparently in the Millennial Hangout, Dickie Spencer drops Renegade Radio as a threat, basically. Says, well, I hope Renegade Radio doesn't take snippets of this out of context and put it up. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You're not worried about Fox News or MSNBC or NPR or any of these Jewy outlets making you look bad, are you? Because they're making you look really good. Even though the official narrative is that you're so persecuted from the media. Oh, no. Everyone's so mean to poor Dickie. No. They're literally putting him on a pedestal. Like, he represents the white Aryan man. What a joke. A lisping, limp-wristed, pseudo-intellectual. No, thank you. That is not an Aryan man. That's a little poofter. And that's just an insult to all white Aryan men ever. It's an insult to your ancestors. Okay, this guy was groomed for his little cushy position as a white nationalist. Yes, you guys. Have you seen the picture of him and his ex-wife, who is, like, openly communist, basically? Have you seen the picture of them with, what was it, Laura Bush? I always get them confused. I think it was Laura. It does not look photoshopped, and it looks like they're in quite an intimate setting. I mean, they're on a lake. It's not like there was some photo op, like, at a, you know, I don't know, like, some kind of press event or something. It's just, hello, that's a little bit concerning to me, you know? Like, this guy is so anti-establishment, yet he is taking pictures with the Bush family. I mean, it's not that surprising because he is a neocon. I mean, he praises neocons. He is behind the Trump presidency and the cabinet full of neocons, Jews. Literally, he is bringing in Goldman Sachs. You guys are like, not you guys, but you know. You Trump-tards are just like, well, it's not all Goldman Sachs Jews that are fleecing us. It's only some of them. No, no, that's not how it works, you guys. Please, just, oh, I don't, it's just so, I just pity them. It's pathetic. I'm just, yeah, it's just like, go away. Go away. You're just, oh, it's like a little mosquito. It's not all of them. It's like just annoying you in your ear. And you just want to slap it and get it away. Oh, so, yeah. Neocons are going to make America great again. Rudy Giuliani is going to make America great again. The guy that played an instrumental role in covering up the Israeli orchestrated and, you know, committed 9/11 crimes, who orchestrated the immediate removal of all of the debris, because, you know, that's what you do in a crime scene. You usually, you know, just take all of the debris, all of the evidence, ship it off to China. I think they actually made it into a ship, some of it. I could be wrong, but I remember reading something about that. And you don't investigate or anything. You just get rid of the evidence as fast as possible, because that's what you totally do when there's, you know, a legitimate act of terror and your government, you know, totally cares about you all. So ridiculous. So ridiculous. So that's all that I have for this little bit here, and I'll be back again for a little snippet, snap it. Maybe I'll even throw in some commercials for nostalgia, since, you know, I might be taking a little hiatus for a little bit. It's going to be really sad, and we're all going to miss each other, but no, I'm, you know, you can't shut me up. I'll be probably putting out a little video here or there, or, like, you know, probably not popping on a round table because I'm too tired to stay up that late, but I get my documentaries done pretty fast. I'm thinking I could get this one done in a few months tops, you know, like 3 or 4. It took me about 8 months for South Africa, but I was in school full time, and, you know, that took up a lot of my time. So this should be able to get done. And with South Africa too, it was like I was going from scratch. With this, a lot of the clips are going to speak for themselves, and I just need to kind of put some commentary in between. But thank you to everyone already that's helped on the script. You know, everyone in the secret place that I'm not supposed to talk about, you know. So, I was looking through Twitter, and I saw that Lana just did a 2-hour interview, which is big, because Lana usually just does 1-hour shows, but for the reactionary Jew, she could make it 2 hours, because, you know, he's a Jew, after all, and what he has to say is important, and they're just our natural allies against those pesky muzzies. So, yes, I clipped up some things here for us to listen to, just some gems from the broadcast. And yes, I did listen to it. So if people want to say, well, did you listen to it? He said a lot of really great things. Yeah, I listened to it and he sounded like a Jew. Surprise, surprise. So I'm just going to play a few little clips, and hopefully this will highlight for you the agenda that's being played out with Red Ice and the alt-right. So now they're just having Jews openly become part of it. Not that it wasn't pretty obvious before, but now, you know, now they're just being more open with it. And, you know, I look through their comment sections, a Cohen this, Ari Cohen, you know, these names, and they're just openly commenting on pro-white things, and they're trying to blend in and say, oh, we're on your side. And, oh, it's the, you know, it's us against the Muslims. Like, yeah, okay. I'm getting really sick of these people thinking that all Arabs just inherently, like, kill each other. I'm sorry. Yes, there's probably an element within every race, you know, and obviously some more than other races that are violent. But let's look at Libya, okay? They were doing pretty damn well. Their country looked a whole lot better than ours does. And they were, oh my gosh, they were black, right? They were blacks, and I guess a lot of them were Muslims. So no, it's not that the Arabs are just going to kill each other until the world ends, because they just can't help themselves. No, Jews have a lot to do with that. So I'm sick of these Jews pretending like, oh my God, everybody else is just genetically inferior, and we never did anything, and oh, we're so persecuted, and blah, blah, blah. I'm just so sick of it. And the white people basically now cucking out to Jews and just wanting to become Jews. You know, Lana even says in this thing, after the Jew brags about how, you know, Israel could just wipe out the entire Arab, you know, countries today if we really wanted to. And Lana goes in her disgusting Beavis laugh, oh, oh, well then why don't you do it? Oh, God, disgusting. Okay, so you're a fag hag, genocidal kike now. I mean, we all kind of knew that, but so genocide is okay only if it's against Arabs, but it's not okay if it's against whites and Jews. No, but those Arabs, they should just be, you know, they should just be wiped out. You know, Iran or even Afghanistan was never, you know, a functioning modern country with a very Western society where the women had fashion and the women were dressed just like, you know, women dressed here in the 50s, and they wore bikinis and they drove muscle cars and they didn't wear veils and they didn't beat their women. But no. These innocent little Jews start to meddle in everyone's affairs and start to steal our money and our resources and our energy and start to rape our countries and their natural resources. That's when things start to get bad, and that's when people start killing each other and things get crazy. So never forget that it's the Jew. And no, to answer the question posed in this interview, can Jews and nationalists, oh, sorry, can Jewish nationalists, whatever the hell that means, I guess that's different from being a Zionist now, though. That's totally different. So can Jewish nationalists and white nationalists work together? I mean, this is ridiculous. If I did a show even saying, like, can Arab nationalists work together with white nationalists, people would flip out. But if it's a Jew, oh no, it's cool. Jews are great. And even in there, I don't know if I grabbed the sound clip because I don't have like a ton of time to comb through it. I just grabbed what I thought was pretty interesting. But they do say something about, it was Lana saying how, you know, Jared Taylor is very open about his Jewish friends that helped him with Amran. Yeah, so, you know, Jews have been a part of the alt-right from the beginning. So we're just brothers in arms now. No. No, N-O, underlined a million times. No. That doesn't work. Okay, anybody that's seriously telling you, let's work together with the people that are trying to kill us. You know, we should just work together against our common enemy, the Muslims, that have so much power over the world. Yeah. Yep, all those Muslims running the banks and, oh, you know, pumping out pedophilic, media. Sorry, I'm a little distracted. You know, yeah, it's all those Muslims that run Hollywood. Oh, yeah, and Saudi Arabia. Oh, my gosh. Oh, no. Even though Saudi Arabians are mostly crypto Jews. So, yeah, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of these hoity-toity alt-right pseudo-intellectual Zionists. That's what they are. You know, why the hell would you have anybody on that's like, okay, for 2 hours, we're going to talk about the nuances of Jews. Like, these Jews think this, and those Jews over there think that, and there's left-wing Jews and right-wing Jews and Jews, Jews, Jews. I mean, it was seriously 2 hours of a Jew on his soapbox talking about how, like, great Jews are and how we're your allies. We're your greatest ally, Goyim. It's me, reactionary Jew. It's me. I'm your friend. You can trust me. Let's go watch them bomb the Palestinians together over a bottle of Manischewitz. It's what we do. It's European. It's Aryan. This guy, yeah, he's like, you know, I'm not for genociding the Palestinians, but they do need to be, you know, like, taken out of this area. It's like, what the hell does that mean, dude? You're not for genociding them, but you're for removing them with force from the place that they've been for longer than you guys. They were there first. Oh my gosh. But he's not for genocide. But Lana clearly is. Lana's like, you should wipe out, Israel should wipe out the entirety of the Middle East. That's seriously what she said. With her whole Beavis laugh at the end. Let's kill them all. Wow. You know what? She actually does give Sean Surplus's argument for women not, you know, being allowed to have their own shows. She gives him a little bit of a, you know, a reason there. You know, he's justified a bit there. Women like her should not be allowed to have, well, I'm not trying to ban freedom of speech, but like, seriously, you're retarded. Someone take away your microphone now and get in the kitchen. Why aren't you pregnant? Why aren't you trad? Why aren't you fashy? But everybody else should be, right? Yeah, okay. So, yes, we'll get to the clips now. Maybe I'll be able to talk in between them because I'll be back in my little studio here after I'm done running some errands. And, you know, we'll just sit back and listen to the reactionary Jew and Lana Lochteff. Ugh. Oh my God, it's disgusting. Okay, so this is what the edgy fashy movement has become: welcoming in Jews and giving them a platform to spread their Jewish crap for 2 hours. Okay, so here we go.
And I think a lot of the Jewish elites who are pushing for multiculturalism don't even understand the struggles of their own people in that same way. So yeah, that divide is a big problem. I'll get to the dynamics of that in Israel. But yeah, I reject the concept that Jewish elites in Europe are actually looking out very often for the best interests of Jews in Europe, because there's nothing they can do, you know, to make their lives worse than importing Muslims. They might have their own, you know, vendettas.
Okay, so I guess you can make that argument that flooding white countries where, you know, Jews just happen to reside in large numbers a lot of the times, flooding them with hostile Muslims who usually hate Jews for a reason is probably not good for them. But really, if you think about it in the bigger picture, it is good for them because then they'll have a reason to go run to Israel and go hide out. And, oh, the anti-Semitism is just too bad. We've got to go. So, you know, they'll run off and hide while the whites are left there to duke it out with the invaders. And the Jews who are pulling the strings the whole time don't have to. There's no consequences for them. So, okay, let's go a little bit further. You know, most people would be thinking, all right, you know, he's a Jew, but look, he's like, he's reactionary. He's fashy.
Because there's nothing they can do, you know, to make their lives worse than importing Muslims. They might have their own, you know, vendettas. They might have their own interests. I don't network with them. I don't know them. I don't read their mind. But they shouldn't be representing us. And I think that that's a big problem.
Okay, so yes, I mean, we can all agree that not every single Jew in the world is part of this cabal necessarily, but does that mean that we should live with each other and consider each other allies necessarily? I don't think so.
Like, when I heard that, I was like, wow, you know, I wouldn't talk like that, but this seems like an excellent pick. I have no idea what I'm really confused by his Secretary of State pick. Not because of Israel, just like I was not expecting him. I thought he would take someone, you know, with more experience.
Oh, you mean Tillerson?
Yeah, I have no idea what's up with that pick.
I guess one good thing about him is good relationship with Putin, with Russia. That's good. Yeah, I think he chose him because as CEO of Exxon, he has a lot of good connections. He's dealt with a lot of world leaders. He can negotiate, and I think that's why he chose him.
Yeah, that's what he said, like, this guy has experience with war. But it was still a pick that baffled me a bit. By the way, I think I want, for Israel, I want better relationship with Russia, too. I don't see why all these successful countries have to be at each other's throats.
Well, then maybe you should stop your elite there, buddy, because they have their little greedy hands in everything, everywhere, including Russia. So maybe you Jews can figure your stuff out first and stop ruining the world. That'd be great.
There is a decent chance that Israel will go to war with ISIS because we share a border on the Golan Heights with the conflict in Syria. And ISIS has been pouring in from both sides, also from the Sinai Desert and from that conflict. So we might have to, you know, take down ISIS in the south.
Should have done it a long time ago, huh?
Yeah. That's one of the biggest fallacies as well. The Taliban and all these things.
Yeah, they're all killing each other too, yeah.
this is the norm for that region, for like Middle East, North Africa. I told this to my white professor, like, you're projecting.
Yeah, there's no peace in Muslim countries either. So
yeah, even if we never got there, like this is one of the most explosive parts of the world and most explosive culture. So yeah, I'd vote for Richard Spencer for president. With the exception of maybe Iran and the Russian aid to Assad, we are the regional hegemon.
Totally has nothing to do with the Jews.
Flatten half the Middle East in an offensive, in an offensive onslaught tomorrow.
Well, then do another it. Thing,
no, that's not a smart thing to do. Like, not necessarily.
Yeah, I'll just do it.
But also, you have like people talk about we're genociding the Palestinians. You know, I think we've shown immense restraint, and we could genocide them tomorrow. You know, we could go in and flatten Gaza tomorrow with our fighter jets.
You pretty much have. There's really not much of it left. And your beloved Trump, who, sadly enough, the Jew is more critical of than most white people, your beloved Trump is going to be the one to usher in the one-state solution, where Palestine, or what's left of it, what, the Gaza Strip, won't even be recognized. It'll just be one state. But apparently this guy is not for genocide. No, no, no. He just wants him to leave and go away, but, you know, or just removed, but that's not genocide. So, yeah, thought this was pretty ridiculous. It's one thing to have a Jew on your show and actually hold their feet to the fire. You know, for example, Mel V, I'm pretty sure she's a Jew. And if she's not, she's just retarded and deserved to basically be made fun of.
And another thing is there's too much assumption, again, of collaboration, that just because you work for Goldman Sachs, you're part of this global cabal and elite that has all these shared interests.
That's true. Yep.
I don't think that's necessarily the case. There's a lot of this tendency on the alt-right to really lump together a lot of people who have disparate interests just because they all oppose your own interests.
Yeah, like all Jews aren't really like bad, and especially all Goldman Sachs Jews. Like, they're not all in on it together over at Goldman Sachs. No, they're good. They're traditional people. That's what this guy kept saying too. He's like, Jews with traditional, we live a traditional life, trad life, we're just like you, doobity-doo. Oh my gosh. Okay. I don't know. I feel like I'm losing my mind. This is just so freaking ridiculous. We have a freaking Jew called Reactionary Jew, Jew-splaining to us about white interests in white countries. Seriously, 2 hours of this guy, he did not shut up. I mean, she barely got a word in. He's like, and Jews this, and then us Jews, and I want this for Jews, and Jews, 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 I'm a Jew, ba-ba-da-ba-ba, Jew, Jew, Jew. Why aren't you in freaking Israel, dude? Why are you here? Why are you making a big spectacle of yourself like, ooh, alternative Jews, we're Jewish dissidents? Then why aren't you going and leading an exodus, a mass exodus? If you did that, I would give you, Reactionary Jew, I would give you a big freaking high five. Although I wouldn't actually touch you, but it would be like, woo, air high five, cool, now get the hell out of here, because that would be cool. I would be fine with you doing that, being a reactionary Jew and reacting to the anti-Semitism that's coming your way and just going. I mean, we can have a peaceful departure, bye, and then we'll, you know, get to clean up our own lands and everything will be great. But, yeah, it's pretty ridiculous, reactionary Jew.
Okay, so now this is his website, him and 2 other Jews, who I'm going to introduce you to now, okay? We've got Ari Ben Kanan, and we're going to learn about him. Oh, great. It's him with an Israeli flag flying behind him. Okay. A secular Jew and expat, American academic living in Israel, Ari Ben Kanan remains as committed to preserving the identity and prosperity of the historic population of the land of his birth as he is to the project of restoring the full sovereignty of his own people and the land of his ancestors. Wait, what? Okay, a secular Jew and expat. Okay, so he used to be American, but so I guess he's concerned with America being white. Yeah, right, okay. All right, next, we're going to meet Joshua Seidel, who is ugly as hell and looks like a Jew. Okay. I'm Joshua Seidel, and I'm a right-wing Jew who's always right. When I'm not ruining your day on Twitter as @JewRightWing, I'm out camping, hiking, fishing, or shooting. I love a cold night and a warm sleeping bag. Don't get too angry with me. Well, we can ensure that by having you go to Israel and staying there. Okay, now we have Reactionary Jew, who Emily Yukas interviewed. Maybe I can play some of that wonderful interview that was really groundbreaking. Okay. A young Orthodox Jew living in the heaping ruins of a once mighty white ethnostate known as the U.S., Reactionary Jew received his B.A. in Critical West Bank Annexation Theory from Amona University and a Master's in Nakba Studies from An Najah National University in Nablus. His acclaimed thesis was titled, Jabotinsky Did Nothing Wrong. He plans to join the ranks of based Smotrich after he makes Aliyah. Reactionary Jew can be reached. Yeah, okay. Yeah, if you want to email him, it's reactionaryjew@gmail.com. So great. They've got podcasts. I'm really looking forward to. Oh, their podcast is called The Skype Chat. That is really original. Okay, let's listen to a little bit of this. There's a huge picture of Bibi Netanyahu. And it's really great. It's called The Skype Chat. We Hears Now. Oh, sorry. I think it's We Herzl Now.
Must be very interesting being a Jew, being a part of the alt-right, having to interact with people who are sort of openly hostile to Jews at times or critical of Jews. How'd you navigate that? I mean, how do you feel about navigating that sort of interesting space?
Well, I mean, I was trying to walk a line, you know, between talking theology, because I know there are going to be Jews who listen to this. I don't actually want sites like Forward to report on that, because they're going to, I mean, I used my voice. I didn't use a voice changer. I don't want this, right. You know, like backlashing against me. It could, you know, I'm prepared for that possibility. I can't totally outrule that, but I don't want this to turn into some sort of storm that involves my personal life.
Okay, so now they're getting back to the topic of Israel, which is totally important to us. So here we go.
What do you think about Israeli politics? I mean, who are some of the key players that people who aren't up to date on Israeli politics should know about? What are their ideas? And what side are you on?
Well, let's go through, let's say, maybe some of the recent events in Israel.
That sounds like a great idea.
We can talk about it in that context. There's a settlement called Amona, and the court ordered it to be cleared out. Some, you know, Arab came forward. This is the thing. It's not actually like some Arab came forward and said, this is my land. That settlement has been there for decades. And they found a team of, you know, Jewish lawyers from Israel were looking for ways to destroy the settlement or just settlements in general. And they found on some old registry in Jordan that this land was granted to some Arab who to this day is still anonymous. Like the owner of this land.
Ottoman deeds from 1918 or something like that.
Yeah.
That show that there's some Arab out there who owned this land. Right.
And he probably didn't even know that he owned this land. And the government had permission or gave the settlers permission to build this initially. So it's something that it's just lawfare, as it's called, to try to use the legal system and the high court in order to, let's be real, expel Jews from their homes in the West Bank
because
they're a fan of the settlement enterprise.
Oh, the poor Jews, they're getting expelled from their settlements. Oh my God, it's so terrible. Oh my gosh, I can't stand any more of this. But yeah, these are the freaking Jews of the alt-right now. The voice of dissident Jewry. Oh yeah, you guys are so dissident. Yeah. Wow. Pathetic. Okay, sorry. I was just trying to skim through some MPI footage here to try and find that thing with Emily Yukas and the Reactionary Jew. But then I see these two guys wearing Domino's masks, the kind of masks that, you know, have been covered here on this network recently, while they're at NPI, because, you know, they're like so important and they're such a threat that these guys have to wear masks because they're just so dangerous. But I just thought that was weird that they're wearing Domino's masks at NPI. Pretty gay. They said they were with the Houston Goilers. I don't know if anyone's heard of that. Okay, here she is with Reactionary Jew, Emily Yukas.
February or March, through a Jewish friend as well who knows Jared Taylor personally.
And I think we have our own nationalism, and it only makes sense that other people also have their nationalism.
Wow, a sensible Jew. Yeah, you're right. You know, Israel has a wall. We need ours.
Yeah, build the wall.
That's right. What do you think of all, like, the echo jokes? Do you find that funny?
Yeah, actually I do, because honestly, when you see leftist and liberal Jews who are just fighting, and not only against white interests, but also against everything that's sane and rational and decent, like, I don't feel all that bad for them.
Right-wing Jews don't do that.
Photoshop memes, and how many of them actually are just as much against, you know, hardcore right-wing Israeli nationalism. They want a two-state solution. They want to give the minorities full rights that would destroy the country there. So even though, yeah, they have a double standard.
Okay, so he's framing this as the Palestinians equal the third world hordes that are invading our countries, and therefore poor Jews, we're totally in the same situation as you, and these evil Palestinians are just wreaking havoc on poor, poor Israel. This is just absolutely ridiculous. All right, so now I'm going to read to you from an article that Veronica Valion just put out. She's been dealing with these disgusting Jews coming after her in the media, on Twitter, claiming, you know, the same old story that they claim for most pro-white women, that, oh, we're controlled, you know, by men, and, you know, we don't actually have our own thoughts, and blah, blah, blah. So, actually, it's interesting, this particular Jew, we'll get to his name later on, I forget it right now, but there's a picture of him on his Twitter, and he's in one of those planes, I forget, those zero-G planes where, you know, they make it look like the people are floating in space. So I keep seeing all these connections to, like, aerospace and NASA. There was Jack Sen's sister who worked for NASA, you know, and then we've got this Jew guy that's, like, up there. He wasn't representing NASA, but it's just kind of weird, like, maybe some military or something. Okay. So it's supposed to be the current year, right? It's almost 2017, and I can't believe how much right-wing women are being unjustly attacked. Now, I wouldn't necessarily call it right-wing, but I guess for, you know, phrasing this for your common folk, it would make sense. I've witnessed so much misogyny in the mainstream media in 2016. It's absolutely horrendous. Don't we live in the age of women's liberation? Leftist women are treated respectfully in the media. They have a Hollywood red carpet rolled out for them. However, women who hold unpopular opinions that go against the media's narrative get treated like complete shit. Recently, the mainstream media has been writing a bunch of articles about me. The National Post, one by Joseph Breen, that's the Jew, was particularly sexist and disturbing. Breen parrots the ridiculous assumption made by another male named Christian Piccolini that neo-Nazis are using me to further their agenda. God forbid a millennial 19-year-old girl goes against the politically correct narrative. She must be controlled and coddled somehow. It's the classic case of an older egotistical man assuming young women do not belong in politics and are not capable of research and independent logical thought. What I found particularly infuriating was the fact that he denies the interracial rape crisis by stating, lurid stories of rape by black men, some true, some invented, are also strong motivators. Invented? Rape statistics are not invented. It's a well-known fact that over 35,000 white women are raped by a black man in the U.S. every year. I specifically emphasize this because leftists are too afraid/refuse to bring it up because it brings into question their equality, race is a social construct doctrine. It also suggests that popular black culture may encourage the mistreatment of women. It's hard to ignore all the popular rap songs calling women bitches and hoes. I remember seeing a Lil Wayne music video that featured females in literal cages. Interracial rape statistics are pure fact and should not be ignored. However, the psychopathic mainstream media journalists will relentlessly deny them as if their little precious life depends on it. I can write a full article. In fact, I can probably write a book specifically on the topic of interracial rape and talk about numerous cases such as the Cologne attacks and the Rotherham sex scandal. However, this information is extremely easy to come across with a few quick Google searches. A lot of pro-female and pro-European activists have been pointing out these critical facts independently for your education. Going back to the National Post article about me, Brian repeatedly sexualizes me, which is extremely creepy considering the fact that I get told daily that I look and sound like I'm 12 to 14 years old. I felt extremely weirded out by the way he described me. It was almost like he was writing erotic fan fiction. He's basically stating that the neo-Nazis are only using me and I'm only popular for my looks and not my intellect. From the article, Veronica Bouchard slouches before the camera in a low-cut dress and a choker. Petite and pretty, she speaks variously in overacted, breathy whisper of a treacly, girlish sing-song. This is not to say young women cannot be racists, just that they have a particular and precious propaganda value to neo-Nazis. The flyer had a picture of her lying on bed in a Lolita-ish pose, showing more skin than clothes. Oddly, after being so blatantly misogynistic, this hypocritical male has the audacity to call white supremacists sexist. As most people who watch my videos know, my friends and I don't parade around saying Europeans are the most supreme and the other races are below us. We simply love and care about our European culture and country and want to ensure that our people have a fair future. We are nationalists. The media whores love to point at us and call us supremacists without even listening to what we have to say, because that's what they're told to do to get a promotion. From the article, sex and sexism have long been a part of white supremacy. Women are seen primarily as baby makers, key players in the struggle to outbreed the other races. First of all, the men that this fool is calling white supremacists, who really are just nationalists, have treated me way more respectfully than leftist men. Please look at how Breen talks about me in his article. It is absolutely disrespectful, but unfortunately, I'm used to leftist men treating women shitty. The most douchey, degenerate, and rude boys in high school happen to be the most liberal. Nationalist men do not see women primarily as baby makers. They love and respect their women as we pass our culture down to the next generation. Our goal was never to outbreed the other races. That would be absolutely ridiculous. Children are expensive and time-consuming. However, we bring awareness to the dropping European birth rates. Right now, we are under replacement level. More young and middle-aged white folks are choosing not to have kids. Thanks to the rise of feminism, both parents are forced to work to support a family and propaganda, specifically... And propaganda specifically targets white women and makes raising children seem impossible, painful, and unnecessary. For example, the movie Neighbors starts off with Seth Rogen and his young white wife having sex in front of their infant child. They were so horny and the child just happened to be in the same room when they couldn't keep their hands off each other. Young frat boys move in next door who enjoy to host house parties. Seth Rogen and his wife feel adventurous and decide to plan to attend one of these parties. They spend hours getting the baby stroller prepared. It takes so long to get the baby supplies into the stroller that they all fall asleep and miss the party. Apparently in this movie, stuffing diapers, baby food, milk bottles, and spare baby clothes into a little stroller is very difficult and a time-consuming task. During the entirety of the movie, their baby is a burden. She keeps crying and getting in the way of their youthful fun. Eventually, they do get to attend the party to consume drugs and alcohol, while Seth Rogen makes dry, unfunny jokes that he wrote himself. Propaganda like this tells young people to just be hedonistic, do drugs, have fun, and screw parenting. Anyways, we do not specifically aim to outbreed and outnumber the other races. We want the white birth rate above the replacement numbers so our people don't go extinct in 2050 like this article predicts, and like this disgusting racist Canadian song Beige Power predicts. Funny how nobody bats an eye at the government-funded anti-white propaganda that says beige power, and when other groups say black power or Asian power, but if you say white power as a white person, you will be labeled the evil racist. Not that I support going into the streets shouting white power to ruffle people's feathers, just pointing out the hypocrisy. Now let's see what interesting things Breen has to say about white genocide. From the article, sometimes Avalion is blatantly trying to force tears about the supposed genocide of white people. If white genocide is not going on, why is the Canadian government supported CBC and National Geographic rubbing into our faces, that the future population will be brownish beige mystery meat and the white race will be gone? This right here fits the exact definition of genocide. Breen claims that my tears are forced. I'm not sure if he is trying to convince the audience that I'm dishonest or that he is such an emotionally dead robot that he genuinely believes this. I'm not afraid to cry and show people how I feel. In the saddest rambling video ever, I teared up a lot because that was the day that I heard about the Rotherham sex scandal. 1,400 young white girls, some as young as 11, were tortured, abused, and raped continuously for years. The worst part about that case is the fact that the police were too afraid of being called racists to arrest these criminals. They allowed the rape and torture to go on for years until enough victims spoke out that they had to do something about it, or else they would look worse. The rapists targeted white girls specifically. Why do you think they did that? These psychopaths absolutely hated women. They completely dehumanized them. Instead of talking about real patriarchic monsters like the Rotherham rapists who literally only see white women as holes to plow through, he attacks nationalist white men who have never sexually assaulted a female before calling them sexist. Breen has absolutely no idea what the word sexist means, yet he throws it around so loosely. I'm not the only female who has to face provocative articles. Many women who have the guts to say similar things have been relentlessly attacked as well. Marine Le Pen, Ann Coulter, Emily Yukis, Melania Trump, although I haven't seen her say much anti-PC stuff, her husband certainly does, and they directly associate her with him. Yeah, I really don't give a shit about Melania Trump. And many more. I suggest you, I don't think Melania Trump's a woman, but yeah, whatever. Google their names and you will see what I mean. If the media said the stuff that they said about these right-wing ladies to a leftist feminist, the sensitive feminist community would be outraged. Actually, I don't think they would actually care if it was a white woman. Even the leftists wouldn't give a shit if it was a white woman. But if it was a non-white woman, yes, they would care. Unfortunately, the mainstream media hypocritically believes that right-wing women are not to be taken seriously or treated respectfully. The media creates an echo chamber that silences all opinions that they deem wrong. They poison the minds of the masses with their blatant lies and fear-mongering tactics. The purpose of Breen writing that article was to discourage other young white women in Canada from speaking out against white genocide, and to discourage the public from taking in the information that I present to them in my videos. They have a political agenda. It clearly does not benefit us as whites. These are our enemies. They hate us, our culture, and want to ensure that we do not have a healthy, prosperous future. All right, now I'm going to read an article from the Daily Beast. It's a short one, and it's called The Jews Begging to Join the Alt-Right. Okay, some quotes. I refuse to join any club that will have me as a member, Groucho Marx famously said. We insist on joining the club that refuses to have us as members. Might as well be the mantra of some aspiring Jewish adherents of the racist alt-right. A nebulous collective of internet trolls, neo-reactionaries, and outright white supremacists, the alt-right has drawn widespread fascination in the wake of Donald Trump's presidential election. Okay, needless to say, these guys aren't exactly fans of the Jews. Oh, they're so dangerous. This is just really stupid. Okay, so they quote Joshua Seidel, one of the Jews that we learned from Alternative Jew, right, or whatever it was called. Joshua Seidel, one of the site's proprietors and an occasional Twitter antagonist of mine, related in an interview that he went through a pretty typical progression in his politics. Starting out as a leftist in college, he became a neocon after 9/11, before winding up where he is today as a wannabe member of the alt-right, or alt-light, as he puts it, acknowledging that he's not as extreme as some of the movement's more vocal spokesmen. Okay, if you have a movement and the Jews think they can join it, there's a frickin' problem, and your movement is retarded. So there, that's it. That's the end of the article. All right, so now we're just going to go over to Norway and visit this, this pedo ring, all the child rape videos that were found. 115 terabytes or something insane like that. I can't even fathom the amount of crap that is. Okay, so this Norway pedophile story is the center of something huge. In addition to the New York Times, ABC, Washington Post, I now see The Guardian took it down. Okay, so the Norway story was initiated by the Associated Press, not fake news media or the Russians. We need to document, archive, and dig fast. Norway's sting appears to involve some kind of smoking gun. Otherwise, why this censorship of real news by the mainstream media? I ran across this in my search. Does Norway pedo ring bust have Clinton connections? Let's see. All right, well, there were some donations. Norway donations to Clinton Foundation to fall nearly 90% off peak. The Norwegian government's planned contribution to the Clinton Foundation next year will be nearly 90% off its peak, news outlets in Norway are reporting. Norway will donate 35.9 million kroner this year, or around $5.1 million, to the Clinton Health Access Initiative, a subsidiary of the Clinton Foundation, according to Norwegian news outlet Hegnar. Okay, so some interesting thoughts here. A verified account of some unknown to me Guardian/Huffington Post/Vice journalist by the name of Karen Geyer on Twitter begs WordPress to take down my blog because, quote, this is where a lot of them are getting information from, end quote, end quote. Why have something even Reddit didn't want, end quote. Okay, so later at night I began to see a call from journalists to sue people like me. Folks, please ask yourselves this. If Pizzagate were not real, would they have needed to delete 4chan threads and subreddits and now attempt to delete and sue a personal blog to hide something that is so obviously fake in their opinion? My post about this mainstream media censorship fact on Reddit was downvoted by some people. Who would downvote this explosive exposure of media censorship? I think we have found our smoking gun. It is the Norway bust, which was initiated by an FBI tip and involved at least one person overseas, with many surmising that there were connections to the Clinton Foundation. So, interesting. They are scrounging. They're trying to cover their tracks as much as they can. And on Reddit, they continue to shut down every thread. Our civilian investigators was shut down. There are also reports of alternative subreddits being created and getting banned within minutes. They don't even stand by their "you violated our rules" claim anymore. Yeah, pretty insane. They're just completely censoring from Reddit, it seems. I don't know if that's to get everyone over to vote. Okay, an interesting article here. just going to get into Nikola Tesla's surprising connection to Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. There was also an article going around that was even better than this one. If someone can remind me of it and send it to me, that'd be great. Okay, so as unpredictable as the current U.S. presidential elections have been, a striking historical side note lies in their connection to the famous Serbian inventor Nikola Tesla. A few days after Tesla died on January 8, 1943, his possessions were seized by officials from the amazingly named government Office of Alien Property. About 3 weeks after that, all of Tesla's things and documents were given a thorough examination by a group of FBI agents that included none other than John G. Trump, the uncle of current Republican candidate for U.S. President Donald J. Trump. This is obviously before the election. Trump's uncle was, by all accounts, a very accomplished and intelligent man, an MIT professor of engineering who helped design X-ray machines for cancer patients and did radar research for the Army during World War II. John G. Trump's analysis of Tesla's papers concluded that, okay, so here's John G. Trump. Tesla's thoughts and efforts during at least the past 15 years were primarily of a speculative, philosophical, and somewhat promotional character, but did not include new, sound, workable principles or methods for realizing such results. Yeah, I'm sure. Uh-huh. But such official dismissal of the significance of the papers Tesla left behind understandably did not sit well with many folks throughout the next 73 years. As if the government would be willing to admit that it found plans for, let's say, the death ray that Tesla was working on in the last years of his life. That kind of situation is ground zero for conspiracy theories. The papers have partially been released, but are still really hard to track down. What became of Tesla's most secret tech is still potentially a mystery if you are inclined to believe that sort of thing. Who has the papers? Did Tesla really develop a death ray? Donald Trump himself often refers to his uncle, invoking John Trump's intelligence as a sort of voucher for his own genetic and historical pedigree. Quote, "My uncle used to tell me about nuclear before nuclear was nuclear," Trump said in one interview. Cool. This would likely be referring to hydrogen bombs rather than the first nuclear bombs, as Trump was born in 1946 after the atomic age was already upon us. Okay. It just shows him like on some huge aircraft carrier with like some big missiles or something. It's just ridiculous. War, yeah! Trump also recalled to the Times, how the uncle, quote, "would tell me many years ago about the power of weapons, someday that the destructive force of these weapons would be so massive that it's going to be a scary world." Certainly expected talk from someone entrusted by the government to look into game-changing doomsday weaponry. John G. Trump's brilliance and his connection to the intellectual history of the country make him, in Trump's view, a kind of guarantee that he himself is smart. As he mentions to the Boston Globe, quote, "my father's brother was a brilliant man. We have very good genetics," end quote. Similarly, he told NBC about his uncle to point out that, quote, "I mean, it's a good gene pool right there," Trump pointed to his head. "I have to do what I have to do," end quote. Oh, wow. Yeah, really great genes. Nikola Tesla's other remarkable connection to this election cycle lies in his vision for the future of the women in this country. As many of Tesla's technological predictions have come true, it's inevitable that his societal prognostications are of interest, especially as they mirror remarkably the current reality. In an interview published with the dramatic title When Woman is Boss, Tesla talked extensively of a coming future where woman would find equality and in fact surpass males in intelligence and power. He somewhat lamented this last part, thinking women would lose their femininity.
It's unclear in general how much of a place women had in an unmarried Tesla's life. By all accounts, he was somewhat of an asexual being focused solely on the mind of work. Well, okay. So there's more, but I just thought that was kind of interesting. I don't think that there was nothing there for anybody to use. I think they took the technology, sealed it away in a vault, and they're not letting anyone know about it. Or they're using it for themselves. Yeah, Tesla wasn't just some retard. So, it's interesting food for thought, nonetheless. But guys, pardon me, I really don't have too much more to share for tonight, so I am going to play for you guys the section on guns to play us out tonight in case you missed that last week, and any other filler stuff from last week in case you missed the podcast after I deleted it, or you just decided to turn it off because you're like, this woman is repeating herself again, I'm gonna turn it off. So either way, if this is it for us for tonight, good night. Thank you for listening. If not, you can stick around and I'll play those recordings and some music at the end. And this is not farewell. It's goodbye for now. I will be back. I probably will miss it, after a couple weeks or something. But I'll keep you all updated about when I'm taking this exam. If I'm not taking the exam, I will most likely, probably pick up doing shows again. We'll see how everything works. As I said, everything's up in the air. But thank you to everybody for your support. Again, if you want to order a DVD, go to whitesouthafrica.com. Anybody in the Florida, Georgia area, that wants to get together January 19th through the 22nd around there, I'm going to probably be hosting the Soylanders in this area. It still is really last minute. I haven't heard anything from them. They're very busy with work. So hopefully we can pull it off, without much time to plan. But sometimes the best things happen on the fly. So thanks for listening, guys, and I will talk to you all soon. Bye. All right, guys. So I wanted to make this quick recording before I forget because I was just glancing at the chat room. I look at it the next day just because you guys always share really interesting things that are related to the topic that's being discussed. And I'm usually out for the count after like 8. So I don't really make it up to chat with you guys live very often. But someone in there was suggesting that the reason, couples decide to get C-sections is because they want to save the woman's vagina from apparently, I guess, being stretched out beyond all belief. And she'll just, sex will never be pleasurable for either of them ever again after having a baby. And I just want to dispel that myth right away. Our bodies were designed to give birth, and they were designed to birth many children, and it takes sex and, the completion of the act to get pregnant again. So I don't know. I guess my grandma that had 11 children and probably would have had more if she wasn't like about to die. I guess her vagina was just totally ruined after the first one, and that's how, 10 more children were born. So, no, that's not true. And if that's the reason they're doing it, that's extremely selfish, first of all, because a C-section is very terrible for a baby. And I'm not trying to guilt mothers and fathers that have had C-sections. I was a C-section baby. And it was an unnecessary C-section, what I call an unnecessarian, because they made up some BS about my the cord being wrapped around my neck, which there's no way they could even tell that. And even nuchal cords, as they're called, are very common, and they are not an emergency. Babies come out with their cords wrapped around their necks all the time, and all that the mother or father has to do is just slip the cord. Everything's very, slippery. Just slip it on over the head and continue to, birth the baby. I think actually my good friend who had her first baby unassisted, like myself, and I've interviewed her. This is Tiffany. If you want to check out the interview, it's up on Firestarter Media. It's YouTube. She was in labor for like 5 days, and it was on again, off again, obviously, And if she were in a hospital, they would have given her a C-section right away. And actually, the cord was wrapped around the baby's neck, and all that they did was just gently move the cord, and the baby was born right into her arms. Or her husband's arms. I forget the story, but, I'm sure it went right into her arms after that. So, C-sections are not necessary to save your vagina from childbirth. our bodies are designed to stretch and then go back to normal. So I'd like everyone to stop believing in this crap, because C-sections are very detrimental to a baby. First of all, the baby's microbiome is not being seeded by the mother's bacteria as they pass through the birth canal. So obviously this can be remedied by doing a swab of the mother's birth canal and then swabbing the inside of the baby's cheek so their microbiome is seeded. They're starting to do this more regularly, but still it doesn't equate to a vaginal birth. Now also, when passing through the birth canal, things are activated by the pressure on the baby's body. Also, liquid and fluid is expelled from the baby's nose and mouth from the pressure passing through the birth canal. It also helps to form the head. And that's why a lot of times babies that come out have like a cone head, because their skull bones actually move in to allow the baby to pass through the birth canal. And that's why babies have what's called a fontanelle, I believe. I think that's the correct terminology. They have a soft spot in their head for, I can't remember when my son's closed. Let me feel. Is yours closed? Yeah, his is closed now. He's almost three. So I think it closed maybe like after a year or so. But this soft spot is actually where they screw in the fetal heart monitors, the internal fetal heart monitors. They screw it into the top of the baby's skull. Yeah, so that's fun for the baby and mother. They're screwing machines into the tops of baby's skulls, and the mothers are in pain because they have this huge machine hanging out of their vagina. I mean, this is insane. This is torturous. And yeah, screwing it into the top of their head at a very crucial time. And that soft spot is very important. It gives us a lot of information as to the baby's health. If the soft spot is severely indented, it means that the baby's dehydrated. So we always want to make sure that that soft spot is protected and make sure everything looks good. So, yeah, C-sections, what else? They're also very traumatic for the mother. You know, as 6 Million was saying, you know, her mother wasn't even completely anesthetized and felt them cutting her abdomen open and ripping a baby out. So this is traumatic for the baby, for the mother. The baby is usually whisked away and is not put into the mother's arms right away. I know some hospitals are starting to do immediate skin-to-skin, but in the eyes of the hospital, that's like 5 seconds. Here you go. You know, they even, at the hospitals and birthing centers and even some midwives, not all midwives are created equal. A lot of them are just nurses. Nurse midwives that are medically minded, and they still think that birth is a medical event when it's not. So many of these, they consider delayed cord clamping or delayed cord clamping and cutting about 5 seconds, when really I hung out with the placenta attached to my son with the umbilical cord intact for several hours, because there's still blood that's being drained from the placenta, blood, stem cells, nutrients, oxygen, very important things that are being transferred from the placenta into the baby's body for several hours after birth. And so when we cut that umbilical cord immediately, the baby is experiencing asphyxiation because they have not been able to receive all the oxygen. Remember that they have been breathing, basically receiving oxygen through the umbilical cord for 9+ months. So for their first breath of air to be a traumatic and scary event where they basically feel like they're dying is not a great way to start out the life, the new life, you know. And often, like I said in the show with Six, they are taken away, whisked away, bathed and swaddled, a hat on. The mother does not get their scent. The mother does not get the immediate skin-to-skin contact. And this is such a crucial window of time. The immediate moment following birth, following the child, you know, entering out of the womb, that is the most crucial time for bonding. And modern medicine is doing everything in its power to get in the way of that crucial moment. And we wonder why so many mothers suck, how they don't even seem to have that maternal instinct anymore. Well, I think that has a lot to do with the traumatic experience that mothers, fathers, and babies have had in the birthing process in first world countries that have been completely over-medicalized and
and have ripped the power away from mothers and fathers to birth their own children in a space of love, in a safe space where they are cared for and protected. So please do not consider having a C-section for any other reason than an absolute emergency. And absolute emergencies are very rare, contrary to what we are told. In a hospital, everything is considered an emergency because they are liable. That is why you are monitored. You're hooked up to a machine 24/7, because if the baby dies, they have to cover their butts and go back and say, well, look, we monitored everything. We've documented everything and we didn't do anything wrong. And our malpractice insurance covers that. Sorry, we killed your baby. Whoops. This happens all the time. So I could get into some more of the barbaric practices that happen in hospitals to mothers and their babies. But I've covered this so many times that I don't want to bore people, but I know we have new listeners. So I'm thinking what I will do is I might have already done it by now, by the time you're listening, but I'm going to do kind of like a video podcast on some birth related stuff. Maybe I'll start a series because this information is so important. And also, the chatter asked why I did not use a midwife. And this is the reason why I didn't use a midwife. I did not want a stranger coming into my home and watching me give birth. And I am so glad that I did not choose to have that happen, because I would have spent several thousands of dollars to have a woman sit there and watch me. I didn't even want my husband around me. I said, get away. I wanted to be by myself in the pool or in the bathroom. I was just walking back and forth from the bathroom, sitting here, sitting there, getting through a contraction over here. And if I was in a hospital, I know for sure I would have ended up with a C-section, because I was bleeding pretty heavily due to rapid dilation where my labor picked up really, really fast. And so I was bleeding, and I'm just, redheads are known to bleed a lot more than others, and it's not always cause for alarm, but most people would see blood and think, oh my God, oh, emergency, when really everything was fine. Everything was absolutely fine. So, that's why I did not want a midwife. First of all, we couldn't afford it. I mean, we could have, put it on credit or something. But then the more that I started to study and learn about birth, I thought, why would I ever invite a stranger into my birthing space? This is a very private event. Birth is just as private as sex, because it is a very sexual event. There's a lot of similar sounds and people and the woman's naked and she's very vulnerable. And I would not want some random person to just show up at my house. I did see the midwife for a consultation. I wanted to see, what they offered. And they told me that, first of all, the woman was very cold and businesslike. I had no warm feelings around her. I was looking for like a mother figure or like an older sister aunt kind of figure, and she was just not what I was looking for. Then she told me that I would have to get a pelvic exam, which means basically forcefully penetrated and opened up with a speculum, which I will never, ever, ever do again. That's what girls are told to do from the time they have their periods. We allow ourselves to be basically raped on a table by a doctor. We'll talk about that another time, because it's just so wrong. But told me that, it would be any of four different midwives could show up in my house. And I think about two of them were black women. No, sorry. No. I mean, I don't want any stranger, but especially not a black woman. Like, you are not my family. Go away. I'm sorry. It's just not right. So I did it unassisted. I would never do it any other way. This is the only way that I would ever give birth ever again, because I'm a very private person. And in order for my body to relax enough to be able to birth a baby, I have to be alone. I don't even want my husband there. I wanted him there for like the end, when I just needed to like cling on to someone, because I thought I was like going off into a crazy different world. It was insane. It's a very psychedelic experience. But that's why. And I think that the reason that many women have these, doctors telling them they have incompetent cervixes is because their bodies are shut down. When we go into a fight or flight you know, state. This happens with animals too, and it's a way to survive, because say they're about to give birth out in the woods and then a predator comes by, their bodies have to be able to shut down and hold the baby in until they've reached a safe place. So this happens to women too. They could be at home laboring, feeling great, like everything's going really well. Okay, things are starting to pick up now. The contractions are getting closer together. So now we need to go to the hospital. They get to the hospital and their labor completely stalls. And you know what they tell them? It's your fault. We need to induce you. We need to give you synthetic oxytocin, which creates the most painful contractions for the mother and the baby because they're artificially created. And then usually they administer Pitocin until the woman and baby go into distress. And then they say, oh, darn, we're going to have to do a C-section. Oh, that's terrible. When really they're incentivizing C-sections because they get thousands of more dollars for a C-section than they do a vaginal birth. So that's why our C-section rate is over, I believe, 30%. And our infant and maternal mortality rates are higher in America than they are in Mexico. So we've got an issue here. We've got an issue when it's safer to literally sit in the middle of the woods and give birth than it is to go into one of these fancy schmancy hospitals that you're going to pay 30 grand to have your wife cut open, traumatized, and then have your son probably stuck with a bunch of poisonous vaccines and have his foreskin chopped off. And then you all leave the hospital utterly traumatized. And, you know, that's how you start off your family. So hopefully that answers some questions and clears up some misconceptions. All right. So I'm going to record something because I have a little free time. I am up in the mountains right now with some of our good friends and their kids, their children. I gotta stop using that word kids because it's baby goats and they're definitely not. They're definitely human. So we're here. We're gonna do some shooting, do some target practice. And we've been up here for a few days. It's been really, really, really nice to be around good people and good friends, true friends, and just to see all of our children play together. It's really, really awesome. It's too bad we all don't live closer together, but I'm sure eventually that'll just happen. And, you know, it'll be good because it's hard to find good friends for your children these days that aren't indoctrinated to hate themselves, or they aren't listening to Miley Cyrus and all this crap. And yeah, so it's been really, really nice. I was looking at a news story briefly yesterday, and it was out of the Washington Post. Apparently in Tempe, Arizona, some Jew, some dual Israeli citizen, snuck into the apartment building of a family, a mother, father, and their toddler. I think it was a girl, their daughter. And they wake up to the toddler crying. They go out into the living room, and the toddler is sitting on this Jew's lap. And he says to them, "I'm your friend." And I think the dad beat the crap out of him, and he tried to run away. The Jew tried to run away, but the dad kept him there. Sorry if you hear gunshots in the background. I'm hiding out in the car because I don't have ear protection right now. But he basically, I don't know. He's probably going to get off the hook if he's an Israeli dual citizen. I think that the cops came and he was arrested. If that happened in my house, he would not have made it out of the house alive. I've got to say, I don't think I would be able to hold back. I would probably do it with my bare hands. I'd ask my husband to tie him down so I can kill him with my bare hands. If someone messes with my child, I will go apeshit. So, yeah, that was just really disgusting. And you know what he said? He was like, the Jew, he said to the authorities, apparently, that he was just drunk. He was intoxicated. He had no idea where he was. And he was just so confused. I mean, I know when I used to get drunk, I totally would just go crawl through, you know, people's apartments and just, you know, try and steal their children. That's what you do when you're too drunk, right? No. So what, will he get off the hook for, he was confused. He was confused. I've heard of people that have connections getting off of DUIs. I mean, where they're going down the opposite side of the highway kind of DUI. They're able to get off of those because they know someone. Oh, they were just confused. Yeah. Yeah. Often when you're completely inebriated, you're confused. It's weird how that works, but I guess only for some people, the law actually matters. So yeah, that story was really, really disturbing. Also, in other
news, I guess you could say. I mean, I haven't really been, tied to my computer, which is nice, so I don't really know too much of what's going on. But I just saw something that apparently a Russian ambassador was just shot in Turkey, and it was all caught on tape. So, yeah. I don't know. I really have not looked into the situation, but it just seems like the perfect way to spark World War III here. And, it's been caught on video, so, you know, that's very convenient. So, I don't know. I haven't had time to look into it, but that's interesting. It seems like they're getting everybody geared up for World War III. Oh, it's going to be so exciting. And all of the Goyim, you know, white children are going to go off and go die for Jews. It's going to be great. Go kill some Arabs. But then we'll have to flood more in here too, because, you know, gotta take care of them. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. So yes, that's exactly what Trump, in my opinion, is here to do. Not actually, you know, Trump is the character. He's not actually acting on his own volition. He doesn't have, you know, actual control to make decisions, but the character, the actor that plays the part, you know, or the character that is Trump, played by an actor, is here to be the war president. I mean, it's very obvious, and it's really funny to see places like TRS and, well, not Daily Stormer, but some of the former Trumpians are now, they're feeling a little disappointed at what Donald Trump is saying now. I saw K-Mac tweeting out, you know, oh yeah, this is terrible. So now all of these shills that were shilling for him the whole entire time are going to play ignorant. Like they had no idea. I saw Red Ice doing something about all the globalists that Trump is pointing to his cabinet. Wow. Really? Wow. Cause that totally wasn't obvious. If anybody took 2 seconds to look into Donald Trump and how he's owned by Jews. No. Oh, but they're just so surprised now that Donald Trump is going back on just about every single thing that he said, and that, oh, he's not going to put Hillary in jail. And, oh, I mean, come on. These people aren't dumb. They know exactly what they're doing. And now they'll be able to be real critical. Oh, we're going to hold his feet to the fire. Now we're going to be critical of him. And then they'll have 4 years of constant, you know, media to produce about Trump, and ooh, we're going to be critical of him. He made a bad decision. But next election, guys, next election, we're really going to do it, because we've shifted the Overton window. Yeah, we've shifted the Overton window. So, you know, like basically the next president is basically going to be Hitler reincarnated, because, you know, the alt-right is a stepping stone, right, guys? Yeah, it's really retarded. So don't let them get away. Don't let them get away with their former Trump worshiping, because they had all of the information shown to them and they refused to look at it. And I don't think it's just due to ignorance. It's due to getting paid to shill. And now they'll shill for something else. I don't know. They'll shill for, like, oh, Richard Spencer's going to run for Congress or something. Or, yeah, wasn't he? I think he might run for Congress, or I forget. Yeah, I don't know. He's probably going to be asking for a lot of money, because, you know, he's not a millionaire or anything. No, that's cool. Richard Spencer is just, he's like a Jared Taylor, in my opinion. He's very unlikable. He comes across as that rich, stuck-up asshole that nobody liked, and that most non-whites, like, that's the stereotypical white male that they hate. I'm not saying that it's justified for them to hate a white man that's, like, you know, in a suit and tie and everything, but he's just a pretentious prick. Dickie Spencer's a pretentious prick. So when he was talking to Al Jazeera, you know, she asked about, well, you know, what do you think about immigrants? And he said something along the lines of, you know, I just think they're pathetic, schlepping around, like, I'm an immigrant. And I just thought, like, dude, that doesn't help your cause. Like, you're talking crap about the people that have no control. I mean, I'm all for free speech, but if you really wanted to make a point, why don't you talk about the Jews that are flooding all these people in, instead of making it look like, oh, they're, you know, they're just coming over and no one's opening the floodgates, or no one's incentivizing them to come over, and no one's using them as a weapon, because that's just not true. So it just makes him look like you're stereotypical racist, and oh, he's so mean to the poor immigrants. And it just, you guys, if he was actually a threat, they wouldn't be covering him every frickin' place that I look. The Atlantic did a video, thank you, Nick, for sharing that with me, It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. They had this like edgy music in the background, and they kept on doing zoom in close ups of all the fashy haircuts at NPI, and it was like, wow. I had actually never really seen, you know, a floor, like on the floor view of NPI. I have heard from B that it is extremely gay, and that seriously they all have fashy haircuts, like a little cult. And she was not wrong, because they, like every guy there, and it was males that made up the majority of the attendees, they had freaking fashies. Now Brian Rue has a fashy. What is going on? What is with the fashy, you guys? This is an 8-year-old boy haircut. It's not manly. I don't get it. I'm not saying all men need to have long hair. I personally like that. But the fashies, wow. Wow. I think people should get a reverse fashy. So you should, like, shave your head so it looks like you're balding. And then, you know, leave, like, and then grow it long in the back. It's a reverse fashy. Okay? And it's going to be cool. I'm telling you, it's going to be a trend soon. The bald look. It's really hot. I also saw that they were interviewing John Podesta. I always get John and Tony confused. I think it was John Podesta. The one that's not fat. Just the ugly one. Okay, so I think it was Meet the Press they had him on. And I guess even... who was it that interviewed Elefantis? Some major news network. And it's just so... It's so rage-inducing to see these people... They raised $25,000 for all the poor, poor victims of Comet Ping Pong and Pizza. Oh, they've been so traumatized by this fake news. And then Kyle and I try to raise $700 to make like a documentary, and they shut us down. But thank you to everybody that still sent some donations our way. We just didn't use Indiegogo or anything like that, because people, I mean, we had already reached our goal, but people were contributing more money just so we can get it done as fast as possible. And we really appreciated that. And if it kept going, we would have been able to make a nice amount of money where I could have worked a lot less, and we both could have worked a lot less at our jobs, at our regular jobs, and have just dedicated more time to the film. But we're going to still be able to do that. Thank you to your donations. And we are moving along on the script. As soon as we get back into town, it's going to be crunch time, because I finally graduated grad school. Isn't that retarded? I had to graduate graduate school. Like, I hate school. I'm done. I did it. I have a master's degree. And really, the only reason I did it is because it boosted my pay scale and my current job significantly. So it was worth it. yeah, I finally finished. So I'm going to have more time to dedicate to the documentary. Although I do have to pass a big exam coming up to get, you know, my certification and everything. So I will be focusing on that as well, but it won't be as intense as school. So luckily I only work 15 hours a week at my job. So it's really not that bad. It was school that was taking up a lot of my time. Well, other than just being a mom, that came first. But it was, you know, my free time, which is very limited, was spent on doing a lot of homework and dumb stuff. So now I'll be able to sink my teeth into this project, and I'm looking forward to that. And I will keep you all updated. It looks like, you know, we had our original outline for Pizzagate, but it looks like we're going even more into depth, because I want to get into the esoteric stuff that, was his name, Casey, I think, that was on Kyle's show, talking about Pan and Pan's Labyrinth, and really interesting show that my Danish friend, who is the bravest woman in Denmark, I just want to say, I won't say her name in case she doesn't want me to mention it, but she knows who I'm talking about, and she is the bravest person. I'm not even going to say woman, because she seems to be the only one naming the Jews there, and she's trying to get everybody else to start doing it, but they're all a bunch of wusses. So she sent me this interview from the SJT report, and I wasn't able to listen to the whole thing. I was in the kitchen getting stuff ready, but it's very, very interesting. This man is talking about an underground
labyrinth, basically, underneath Washington, D.C., and obviously under the White House specifically, and all the, you know, the tunnel systems and all these things that run throughout D.C., and I'm sure, you know, obviously, we know it's not just D.C., it's everywhere. I mean, there's a whole underground world that we don't even know about. They're able to create and mimic sunlight underground, and this is not even just for the chosen ones. They've been looking into building down underneath Chicago, and I watched a whole documentary on it. It was actually pretty interesting, where they want to construct underground cities for just people. So if they have this knowledge, you know, they already have underground cities, and they're able to create artificial or actually get like very similar light to sunlight down there. But we know that these things are vampires, so they don't even necessarily need sun. They could live down there in their underground cities and everything just fine, because they don't like the sun. They're vampires. They just suck off of people's blood and life energy. So I have a feeling they're all down there, the ones that actually have power. And, because just think about how they're spraying our skies everywhere. I mean, I have not seen a bright blue sky in a very long time. And whenever I do, it's very rare. And it's usually a very short amount of time before a plane comes right by, right over my head and starts spraying. So, when I ask myself, okay, if it's poisonous chemicals that they're spraying down on us, you know, or heavy metals, well, then why would they do that? Because that would affect them. But would it? I mean, if they're all underground or if they have some kind of immunity to it. But then I've also considered that it's completely just a psychological operation where it's, you know, psychological warfare in more ways than one. It's blocking out the sun. It's also making us feel trapped and helpless. So, you know, I'm sure there's many different reasons for what they're doing, but some people say that they don't spray over Israel. And I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, but it would still blow over. It's not like Israel's in a bubble. Well, you know, they're technically in the Iron Dome. So maybe their high-tech Iron Dome system also protects from chemtrails. I'm being facetious because the Iron Dome is all a bunch of BS, in my opinion. I think it's all pyrotechnics and theatrics. If you've ever watched a video on YouTube, just, you know, YouTube Iron Dome, or them, you know, shooting down the supposed missiles coming from Hamas. Yeah, because the Palestinians totally have, like, missiles and stuff. And if they do, they're probably old as hell, they don't even work. But it's all theatrics. They want the Israeli population to feel like they're under attack, so then they will cheer on, you know, like going and killing all these innocent people. But yeah, I think it's all bullshit. They all stand there and cheer like, "Oh my gosh, the Iron Dome saved us again." And it's really not even real. They psychologically screw with their own people. I mean, we know they do it to us, but they do it to their own too, in the way that they want them to feel like they're the eternal victims. They take their children to these, to the Holocaust museums and to the old death camps of Germany, of World War II, and oh, all the Jews that died there. And they sit there and they traumatize them so they feel like they're a constant victim. I mean, they have these kids all crying and they're like, "See under this stairwell? You would have been shot here for being a Jew." And they're all like, "Oh my God, it's terrible." So they just, oh God, they're so demented. It's really strange. I mean, with Jews, they have a genetic aspect, but also like their family life is so twisted and disgusting. Just even looking into some of these abuse cases and satanic, and I say that in air quotes because it's really Jewish, it's Talmudic, satanic rituals. A lot of these people are Jews, and it's very common for these Jews to even adopt Aryan children and most likely abuse them. I'm not saying all of them do, but very weird stuff. I actually had a woman contact me through Heathen Women that she said she was adopted and raised by Jews and sexually abused. And, I think she has like, you know, a lot of issues from that. And she's trying to like deprogram herself. And I wrote back to her, but I never heard anything back. I don't know. But that seems to be a pretty common story. You even had that
that woman on Oprah that, you know, she was brought up in one of those, like, baby-killing cults, basically. It's very, very strange. So it seems that this is linked to Dionysus and Dionysian cults, which really seem to just be vampire cults, where they truly believe that they truly believe that they gain power from, you know, from cannibalism, from, you know, these dark occult or dark magic, black magic, whatever you want to call it, because a cult isn't necessarily evil, it just means hidden. They're born and bred into it. I mean, they don't, it's like normal for them. They probably don't even know any different. And so they have to, you know, watch themselves around us normal people. That's why Donald Trump's, you know, it slips out every once in a while because he's a sick piece of shit. But, you know, like the comments about his daughter, and I'm seeing now that people think, Ivanka Trump was born a man. I don't know. I think the fingers thing is not always accurate. I don't know. Maybe it is. I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if she was born a boy. I don't know. Her mom was tall, and there are some tall women. But then again, I don't know. Wow. These Jews love to do this to their own kids. I was actually talking to my friend here, who, I forget where she met these people, but she thinks they're Jews. And they just so happened to dress up their son in dresses. And, you know, they're totally progressive and awesome. It's really wonderful. So it seems to be just a common thing that Jews like to do. They have really weird ideas of gender and sexuality, clearly. Actually, I knew this girl who turned into a man in the end there. Okay, sorry. I was called out to shoot. I'm back in the car now. So this girl, I was roommates with her at the behavior modification gulag. And she had like a masturbation addiction. And she was just very strange, and I know she was Jewish. And then when she got out of the program, she transitioned into a, like, man. Obviously not a real man, but there was even a documentary about her, her, him, it, on YouTube. It was so gross. It was really weird to see this girl that I used to, you know as a girl that turned into, like, this weird-looking dude. With facial hair and short hair, and it was just so weird. But it seems to just run in Jewish blood that they have issues. They're just freaking messed up. And there's the theory that Jews are not technically a race, that they're just a mixture of a bunch of different races. I kind of agree with both sides, because we can clearly, you know, pick up Jewish blood on a DNA test, you know, and we can't necessarily pick up Buddhist or Christian blood. I mean, we can infer from, but not really even with Christian, because Christianity is a universalist religion. Therefore, a black person, a Chinese person, a whatever person can be a Christian, because all are one in the eyes of God. So how is that white again? I don't know. I will never understand Christians, pro-white Christians. I will never understand it. Doesn't mean I don't like them. Just sometimes shake my head like, what? But yeah, so they are mostly mixed though, too. I mean, you have more of your, I guess they refer to them as Ashkenazic, which are more of the ones that look more European, probably have more stolen European blood. And even a lot of these Israeli girls that they parade around as so hot, you know, and their little IDF calendars with, like, you know, like hot girls in bikinis with AKs and stuff. They're mostly Germanic. I mean, it's like they stole a bunch of German women after, you know, Germany was completely raped, and they just, you know, used their genetics to make their women look a little less hideous. And in most cases, they just completely are, like, white, and they've just been raised there, or, you know, or I guess they wouldn't be completely white, but most of their genetics were at one time white, and that's why they aren't so hideous looking. But you can even tell, like, with black Jews, you know, you can usually
tell the difference between like a sub-Saharan African and then a black Jew, because you can even see the Jewiness in the blacks. And especially if they're mixed, you know, like lighter skinned, or they have more of an admixture of Jewishness to black, then they really do look Jewy. And even Chinese Jews, they're starting to show their own little unique phenotype. So it's a weird thing, and I think they want us confused on that, because you can't, it's like you can never pin them down. Who's a Jew? Who's not a Jew? Everybody's a Jew these days. I don't know. It's weird. It's very weird. So I don't know what you guys think, if they are a race or if they are a sub-race. I've heard that used before. But I hate when people say, no, they're not a race. They're just a religion. Anybody can join. Because then that takes out the aspect of genetic predispositions to behaviors and diseases and all that, which is just completely silly, because you're ignoring science. Yeah, I said it, science. Ooh, but I'm technically not allowed to speak about such things because A, I'm a woman, and B, the earth is a sphere because Manasseh said so. So yeah, let's see. Some other stuff to tell you about from the trip. On the way up here, there was this one section going through Georgia that was like, I don't even know how many damn billboards in a row that we saw of sex shops and strippers. There was even this one stripper place. It was like, as seen on Jerry Springer. And I'm just thinking, my children have to sit here and look at this crap while they drive down the street. And like, that's just, that has to stop by the next time I have another child. It's just be all finished and done. So yeah, also with this trip, I've learned that it's probably best for me to just keep my circle small, because every time I try to extend it and invite new people into our little group, it just doesn't work. One guy had offered to teach us self-defense, you know, and come like help out because we were having a bit of a little meetup. And then so my friend looked him up, and he was in the paper for, he was charged with trying to kill his wife, trying to strangle her, but he wasn't found guilty, but there were mugshots of him. And so I said, look, dude, I'm sorry. Like, you can't come. She's like, there's mugshots of you, and it's in your local newspaper saying you tried to kill your wife. Like, I can't take a chance. She might've been a crazy bitch that made it up, but I can't take that chance. And no one else wants to take that chance either. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you missed out on, or you lost money because you bought a plane ticket and you could, you know, I'm sorry. If you want to kill me for that, that's okay. I don't know. But yeah, that was just really disturbing. And then another person had thyroid problems. So, you know, they couldn't make it. That's normal for, you know, a young person. And it's just not meant to be. So I'm glad that I've learned my lesson, and I'm not really going to try to extend my circle, because it's best to keep it small with a small group of people that you trust, because we have been turned on so many damn times, and it's getting pretty old. So keep those who you know you can trust close to you, and keep your enemies closer. I don't even know what that means. Why do people say that? I'm watching my friend. She's firing a gun for the first time, and she's using my little gun, and it's awesome. I remember the first time I shot a gun, I was so afraid. And then after, I was like, this energy came over me, like, whoa, I really like that. Let's do it again. My mom was the same way. My mom's terrified of guns, but I took her to the range, and she was like, oh, that was a lot of fun. It's actually a good exercise for your focus and concentration and breathing. It's just a very good thing to know how to do, and I hope I never actually have to use my gun, but I'm not going to be caught, you know, unprepared. Also, we've got Christmas coming up, or Yuletide, if you prefer that, and, yeah, it doesn't even really feel like it. I never was too excited about Yuletide until being a parent, and now it's actually fun. Now I actually have the desire to put up decorations and cute little things. Before it was just, oh, great. You know, I usually even had to work on Christmas, which was stupid, but you and Mika make a good amount of shekels that day. But yeah, I'm just really glad that this Christmas I don't have to spend it with the annoying family that hates us now because I don't want to be around my dyke cousin. Just really glad that's not the case. You know, I saw this video. It was called Queer Kids. Yeah, there's a whole YouTube channel run by this fat dyke Jewess, very similar to the one that Kyle and I almost got in the fight with. She runs this channel called Queer Kids, and it's like teaching little kids about trannies and this and that. And I even saw this publication coming out of Germany that they want to basically show children how to use dildos and all these disgusting things, teach them about anal sex, and they give live performances because they need to know how this is done. So, I mean, if you're surprised, this has been going on for, like, before, you know, before a couple years ago. I mean, there was the Kinderladen movement, which if you haven't looked into that, check that out. There's an article about it on the Tribune where basically they would have adults and children just like living, you know, naked around each other and experimenting sexually. And it was encouraged because, you know, the reason that the evil Nazis killed 6 million Jews is because they were so sexually repressed because, you know, Hitler's Germany was just sexually repressed and nobody had sex. That's why there were so many children. And it was just terrible. And it was their sexual repression which led them to kill 6 million Jews. So now they got to start raping their own children and touching them sexually and introducing them to sex when they're two, because, you know, you don't want to repress them. Seriously, this was going on after World War II during the denazification, you know, time period. And there was a publication or some kind of like infographic sexual education thing that was handed out, and I think it was German schools a couple years ago, where they were encouraging the fathers of young children to touch the clitorises of their daughters and to engage in mutual masturbations. I think even they were saying, I mean, this it makes me like my whole body wants to cringe and just I want to throw up when I think about these things. It's just so disgusting. So. Yeah, I keep seeing this meme thrown around, the alt-kike and the new right and the Lauren Southern crowd, the libertarians, that it's like, oh, hey, I'm Germany and I'm ruining Europe for the third time in a row. So there's all this anti-German rhetoric, even from people that I thought were cool. There was this one guy who, like, was, big fan of Renegade for a while, was talking to me. And I agreed with him on a lot of things. He could see a lot of the shills. And then he just went, like, totally anti-German because the Germans killed Poles during the war. And he just made it into this whole, like, I'm a victim and the Germans are out to get all the Poles. And, oh, never forget the crimes that the Germans did. It's like, dude, this was a war. This was a war. Bad shit happened on both sides. For you to still, like, be against Germany just because they killed some Poles back in the day, it's absolutely retarded. Like, you're so stupid. Am I going to be against British people because they fucked over the Irish? No. That happened a long damn time ago. It's just so silly. Ugh. I get really mad about that. But all this anti-German shit, not cool. You know, it's not Germany that's destroying Europe for the third time. It's Jews. Big difference. And they're going after Germany because Germans are a big threat. Germanic stock, big threat. And I think this gets even more specific with bloodlines. I think they really want to get rid of this Rh negative blood. And $6 million gas bill, and I covered that last week, or was it? I think we got into the Rogam shot, that we're starting to think that maybe it's just a complete line of BS to just start polluting that bloodline to get rid of it, you know, because it's a threat. And there's something there. There's something to it. And I know a lot of people with Rh negative blood have like weird anomalies with electricity. And I myself have kind of had these things happen. It happens to my son too. Like, for example, we were at a little arcade where he can ride on the rides. And we both, when we got around the machine, it just started like malfunctioning. Like on the computer started like, you know, instead of having the display, like, press here to start, it just had all these, like, numbers and letters running across, like a weird computer screen, and then it wouldn't work. So, and we had put our hands on it, like, touched it, and it just started going all nuts. I know I've been with Kyle where we're walking down the street, and, like, a street light will go out, like, when he walks by it or something. And I'm not saying, oh, it's you know, because we're extra special or something. I just think there's something weird going on there. I know other people have expressed that too, that have Rh negative blood. weird stuff with electronics. And I don't know. I mean, where did it come from? It seems that there's a large concentration of this Rh negative blood in the Basque area. And the Basque people go back a long, long time. And it seems that that's, I don't know, I might be wrong, because my friend, the bravest person in Denmark, she knows a lot about Rh negative blood too. And she sent me this cool documentary. You just have to ignore the Nazi crap propaganda. But it was called like Andaluvian Civilization or something. And it gets into this Rh negative blood. And I don't know. It's weird. It's weird. I wonder if they go after, like, for their blood drinking and cannibalism, I wonder if they target Rh negative children. I wonder if, like, that blood is, like, more delicious to them or something. I don't know. Because I know Deplorable Princess, when she was talking about her stay in that facility that was for children with behavioral issues or whatever, or, oh, they're just, you know, so sick, basically just a mind control prison. She said that she noticed when she was there that a lot of the children had green eyes. And I don't think that that's any mistake. And I know for a fact that a lot of these psychiatrists and psychologists are Jews and actual Mossad agents that come in and basically just take over a small area. And then they, you know, they all keep it within the tribe and they all help each other's businesses out and scratch each other on the back. And then they're able to basically find potential threats in children that are very intelligent, that would be a threat down the line. And they start profiling them and they start medicating them. And in my case, send them away. And I know that a lot of us were targeted, a lot of us that were put on these meds, we were targeted because we showed a rebelliousness, and questioned the lies, and they don't like that. And so, I don't think it's any mistake that the majority of those children in there had green eyes. I think usually there's a higher rate of green eyes with Rh negative blood too. So I think that's interesting. You know, I was actually looking back on it. I found the doctor that was responsible basically for telling my parents about the program and, you know, giving them the whole sob story of I'm going to die if I don't, you know, wind up there. His name was Dr. Ewing, like Ewing. I think it's even spelled E-W-I-N-G, or maybe it's E-U-I-N-G. I remember his ugly horse-faced daughter was at our school too. It was Sarah Ewing or something. I don't know. I think they might have been Jews. I wouldn't be surprised. Okay, and for the last bit of the show, this is how dedicated I am, you guys. I'm in a bathroom right now at the cabin. Snuck away so I could read this. Actually, our friends were having us look at this book. It's called Boston's Gun Bible. And I want to read to you guys a section about women and guns. Okay, so here we go. Sorry if you hear the heat, like, just turned on and I'm sitting right next to the vent, so sorry. Sorry for the white noise. Statistically, women have a 50% chance of being a victim of violent crime by age 30. This predatory environment is the result of too many men abdicating their duty to protect women against society's nastier elements. I don't mean that women cannot protect themselves. My point is this. Why should they have to? They shouldn't have to any more than they should have to change their own oil. Yes, they can do it, but they shouldn't have to, and there's a difference. Ladies, there are much finer creatures than we are. Oh, sorry. Ladies, you are much finer creatures than we are. You are too precious and lovely for such crude tasks. Let us change the flat tires, put out the forest fires, and defend the borders. I would love that if they actually were. Okay. Rabid feminists, i.e. the men-hating kind, are no doubt shrieking at this point. We're liberated, they bellow. We don't need men to protect us. Technically, they're right. They don't, but that's not the issue. Women who seek equality with men lack ambition. I really like that. Be careful what you ask for. In Russia, men and women are equal. The socialist state recognizes only citizens, and women join men in all the grimy chores. Women fix sewer pipes and change truck transmissions along with the men, and they look like men because of it. Civilization, random beauty, and elegance have died there, and that's the vital issue. Women can do a man's job, but men can't do a woman's job. It's just not in us.
Jeff Cooper wrote, "Men are here to protect women, and women are here to civilize men. When women are consumed with a myriad of coarse chores, which men should bear, they have little time, energy, or inclination to civilize men. My other point is this. Women can more easily protect themselves than men can self-civilize. So, well, when men are not civilized, society becomes a beer-swilling trailer park. Left to our own canine devices, men will regress to the raunchy raconteurs and methane dispensers we are at heart." I don't necessarily agree with that, but this is his own words. Okay. "While often dissatisfied with men, women don't realize that they themselves are the solution. Men don't make men, women do. Women determine the quality of men. As Louise told Thelma," not Thelma, sorry, "Thelma, you get what you settle for. If women would quit having the children of oafs and morons, then they'd die off. Women are the lifeguards of the gene pool, and they should start choosing quality mates as critters have always done. Women have been debased so as to give oafs better odds. The question is, why have women allowed their debasement? Ladies, do not speak to, date, sleep with, or marry a hopelessly substandard male." Oh yeah, that is like the best advice ever. "Don't encourage him with the slightest of smiles. He shouldn't exist. So treat him that way." This is seriously it. Like, with all these mutant males, all these new males, all these retarded, subpar, low-functioning males, they shouldn't even be here, so just pretend they're dead. Okay. "Above all, do not have his children. If he can't catch an introspective clue, then let him die alone. Let his shoddy genes be lost forever. Do not feel sorry for him. This is not cruelty, this is quality control. You are responsible because men will sleep with almost anybody." Yeah. "We're the seed sowers, and it's not in us to be picky. You're the child bearer, so you have to be selective. When women refuse to civilize men, men become Al Bundy from Married with Children. Why? Because inside every man is a potential Al Bundy, and it's women's duty to ensure that he never sees the light of day. Although men can, with rare and great effort, single-handedly keep their own Al locked up, what's the point if women no longer seem to care? Believe me, we can tell if women care. They don't, and they're reaping the cruel justice of getting the lazy, irresponsible worms they deserve. Ignore genuine courtesy, honor, and responsibility in men, and women get prissy, whining, amoral cowards. Fill up a nation with such males, then the country is left with only bi-gender women, and the predators begin to take over. And that's where we are now. Courting Darth Vader, the feminized society then cries for a hyper-masculine police state to restore order. When gentlemen are gone, government thugs fill the vacuum. This trend has been accelerating in America since the late 1960s. There was a time, even in my remembrance, when American men were manly, heads of their houses, and respected by their wives and children. They were rugged and hard-nosed and not swathed in a soft pink jello. A thief was a thief to them, and not a disadvantaged, underprivileged, culturally deprived weakling. I've seen men beat up other men who attempted to snatch a woman's purse on the public streets, or who kicked a dog or punched a child. When men are unarmed, spiritually, if not physically, then a country becomes depraved, weak, degenerate, feeble, of spirit, dependent, guideless, sick. Such a country can never resist authoritarian despots, tyrannies, and men on horseback. Communism. Our presidents are always talking about our image abroad. I have news for them. Our image is a surrogate mama in an apron with a baby bottle in his hand. Surrogate mama to a laughing and contemptuous world. Bottle feeder to ravenous infants who proclaim themselves heads of some obscure state in some backyard continent. This is our image abroad. Does it make a nice picture to you? Then do something about it. Start in your own house, and then with your local government. Unseat your emasculators in Washington. Drive them from your schools and your courts. Proclaim to the world again and again that you will stand for no more nonsense and that our flag is to be honored wherever it flies, over any embassy, that you have power and are quite willing to use it, in the name of freedom and justice, tempered only slightly by masculine mercy. Then, perhaps America will be honorably feared and respected, and peace might really come to a mad and disordered world.
The center that cannot hold might tighten and become iron and invincible, and doomsday thus averted. Remember this, the strongest sign of decay of a nation is the feminization of men. Okay, I want to say, I don't even think it's like feminization. I just think it's a de-balling. Like, I don't, they're not becoming women because women can never act, like a man can never become a woman. So it's de-balling and I don't know, maybe that is the technical term for it. I don't know. Okay. The feminization of men and the masculinization of women, the decay and ruin of a nation always has lain in the hands of its women. So does its life and strength, its reverence for beauty, its mercy and kindness, above all, its men. So I don't think this person is trying to like blame women, but saying that when it's unbalanced, when the genders are not balanced, when we're not, you know, being our true selves, express, you know, our true expressions of what feminine and masculine is, things are corrupted, and that's why these enemies know that, and that's why they corrupt the sacred feminine and sacred masculine. Okay, men will be responsible, honorable, and even heroic if women encourage and respect us for it. We need it, for we cannot forever run on our own meager batteries. Granted, no man is emasculated without his assent, but we cannot fight the relentless onslaught of manhood without women's help. A dime's worth of respect and approval from ladies get a dollar's worth of effort from us. Men are the draft animals of the human race, and we work cheaply. We're built that way and don't mind shouldering the yoke of human existence, but we do need at least that dime, and we're getting pennies. Ladies are not silly froth. Gentlemen are not brainless brutes. We were made to complement each other, but until men are respected for their manhood so they can clean up our streets, American women sadly should daily carry a handgun. All right, so let's get into handguns here. Self-defense is not merely our legal right, but our moral duty. Because women are more vulnerable than men, their need and obligation to defend themselves is even greater than that of men. And that was said by Dr. Thomas C. Szasz, professor of psychiatry at Syracuse University. The decision for a woman to go armed is a major one for most women. It is not just a matter of purchasing a weapon and training to become competent in its use. It is a change in her lifestyle and outlook on life. No longer will she be at the mercy of those who are physically stronger or more violent. She will be in a position to control her own destiny and go where she wishes, knowing that she can depend on her own resources alone to see her through any developing crisis. This does not mean that she should be foolhardy or go into areas where trouble is likely and could be avoided. What it means is that if all of the best laid plans go astray, she has a choice not to become another victim. This, for many, is a radical change in outlook on life. To be able to really accomplish this means that she will have to make certain adjustments in her lifestyle, clothing, and behavior patterns. All the firearms training in the world and best equipment mean nothing if the weapon is not available in times of crises, in the hands of someone who has adopted the proper mental outlook so as to allow her to utilize the training and equipment. We will assume that the female shooter will be adequately trained before carrying a weapon. It is highly irresponsible to merely show someone how a weapon works and then to send her out armed on the street. The workings of the weapon must be carefully explained. She must learn how to shoot it under street conditions and understand the legal limitations of the use of force. Lastly, she must be trained to respond to typical street-type encounters and want to be able to defend herself. She must realize the importance of her weapon and appreciate the critical role it plays in her life. In my experience, all but this last point are easy enough to achieve if you try hard enough, are patient, and utilize good training techniques and equipment. The last point, what I call mental conditioning, is the hardest. It is very hard to convince many people that the only thing standing between them and serious harm is their weapon, that they must carry it with them at all times from now on. It is not just an emergency situation, but will be part of their lifestyle forever. Any other approach will lead to the weapon not being available at the right time. Once a person realizes this, no problem is encountered with leaving the weapon behind. But getting people to realize this is very difficult. That was from Timothy Mullen, Round Guns, Square Guns, 2000. A high-quality, reliable, concealable, and powerful handgun is essential for women. Without its daily presence and the training to use it, women are at the mercy of random chance. And this is me. I've come way too frickin' close to having something really awful happening that I know that my time is limited, seeing as 50% of women are involved in these violent crimes. Okay. I've trained dozens of ladies with their first handgun, and they constantly remark how much more confident they feel being armed. Yes, I can attest to that. Absolutely. One friend had nearly given up hiking in the forest next to her home because she had once walked into a camp of dirt bags. Now she hikes whenever she wants, as is her right. All right, so now we're going to get into which kind of gun to get, and then I will close it out because we'll be done soon. Okay. Which kind of handgun, a semi-auto or a revolver? Semi-automatics are usually more powerful, hold more rounds, are quicker to reload, and are more concealable. They do, however, require a bit more training and practice. Good semi-autos run from, this currency is not ours, so I don't know. It's a weird symbol. I've never seen that symbol before. What does that even mean? Oh, wait. I don't know if this is price or something else. I'm sorry. Okay. If you cannot or will not spend the extra time and money for a semi-auto, then a revolver, for example, a Smith & Wesson 38, a special Taurus 44 special will suffice. Okay. Good revolvers run from, okay, and those are the prices again. Regardless of which you choose, have a handgun. Avoid the tiny, cute guns. Cute won't save your life. And I was realizing this today. I bought a, what was it, 32 Kel-Tec, and it kept jamming. I needed to break it in, so we finally broke it in today. But it's small, and my friend informed me that if there was a big fat guy in a puffy coat, that it wouldn't even hit him. It wouldn't even go through his coat. So I'm going to be upgrading soon. I was not experienced. I didn't have a lot of money, and so I bought a small 32, but I'm going to need something bigger. All right. So carry the largest pistol you can conceal and the most powerful cartridge you can handle. When I mean handle, I mean comfortably and confidently so. While any handgun may seem intimidating at first, don't choose a tiny 25 because it's cute. Your handgun must be sufficiently powerful to stop an assailant. Cute won't do it. A too powerful handgun, however, defeats the purpose. Unless you enjoy shooting your pistol, you won't train with it often enough, if at all, and regular training is vital. If you're not well trained with it, you won't carry it, and your pistol must be with you to do its job. The cartridge, not too small and not too big. For semi-autos, I recommend the 40 Smith & Wesson cartridge. If the 40 is too stout for you, then go... Sorry, the train was making sounds. Then go 9x19 or even 9x18 Makarov or a 380. Any cartridge is better than none at all. Besides, with practice, you'll probably be able to later work up to the 40 or even 45. First rule of any gunfight, have a gun. Check. Okay. In revolvers, I recommend the 44 Special if you can handle it, or if not, the 38 Special. Any good indoor gun range will have various handguns to rent. Go with a teacher friend, preferably one who has attended Thunder Ranch, etc., and try out different handguns. Among the models I list later on, choose one that feels best to you, as personal affinity is very important. I guarantee you that at least one of them will seem particularly comfortable. As long as it's sufficiently reliable and powerful, then whatever it is will be a fine choice for you. Don't worry if it's not a Glock. You won't hurt my feelings. I shot a Glock today, I think. Did I? Yeah. Yeah. No, maybe I didn't. I think I was going to, but then I had to run back to the car. Okay. How much should I pay? As much as your life is worth. A quality handgun is a tool designed to save your life in a lethal emergency. So how much is your life worth? For example, $150 will buy you a very... I think they're saying dollars. I don't know. This sign is weird. $150 will buy you a very decent Makarov at 9x18, but $500 gets you a Glock in 40 or 45. That's a $350 difference you paid for a Glock or SIG, or Colt, or HK could make all the difference. If I had to carry a Makarov, well, I'd make do, but my life deserves better. So should yours. There's an important conceptual difference between how much one can pay versus how much one can afford. While you might technically be able to pay for a month at the Paris Ritz, affording it is likely another matter. Pay for the most reliable, highest quality handgun, not for merely what you can afford. We're talking about saving lives here. Let me put it another way. If your spouse needed a complicated surgery to survive, would you seek out the best surgeon in the world? Yeah. What's the point of saving money at the local hospital if the operation fails? Seek out the best handgun for yourself. The few hundred dollars you save in lesser guns and gear just isn't worth it. There are many things in life you should never skimp on, and tools for self-defense are at the top of that list. This person's right. They are right. Quality goods you pay for once. Crappy goods cost you forever. As Carl Welcher of Lasa wisely quipped, expensive is when the product is not worth the money. Semi-autos. Which cartridge? I'll start with handguns in the most powerful common cartridge, the .45, and work down to the .22LR. For many reasons, I despise centerfire semi-autos by Ruger or Smith & Wesson. They are not pro-Second Amendment, and their products are often inferior. I will recommend smaller-framed handguns, which will fit in your hands better and conceal more easily. I'm just going to add my own thing here for concealing a weapon, right? Okay, so once you have your concealed license, I have mine. I keep my gun in my purse usually when I'm out, but this is not even that much better than not having a gun because I need to have it on my body. Okay. If someone's going to come up and rob me, they're going to take my purse and they're going to get my gun. So it's really important if you have a concealed weapon to wear it on you. So there are different kinds of clothing that you can buy. And my friend was telling me here that you can actually buy patches and sew them on inside of your coat or, you know, a pair of jeans. You can get a holster. So if you're going to have a concealed weapon, you should have it on your body because otherwise it's pretty much useless. And I'm preaching to the choir here because I'm still trying to, you know, get all equipped and everything. So we'll get back into this and then we'll be done. We'll go over semi-autos, revolvers, and I think that's all we'll be able to get to. Maybe in the future, when I actually buy this book, we can get more into shotguns and rifles. This is a really cool book. So I think I'm going to buy it. All right. Which cartridge? So we've already gone through that. Now, okay, let's talk about the .45. A Glock 30, this is the ones that he... You know what? Maybe I should skip through this part because you guys might not even know like what these things mean. So you'd have to go look it up. But here, okay, so there's 45s, 40s, 9x19s, 375 SIG, 9x18, a 380, 32, which I wouldn't really necessarily, I guess, recommend. But 25, 22LR. And he says, if possible, choose a stainless steel model over blue. The steel resists corrosion better. Don't stray from my picks, as they're all fine guns, and there's something there to please any lady. If you want a quick recommendation, go for a subcompact Glock, either the G27, it's a 40 Smith & Wesson, or the G26, it's a 9mm. I prefer the G27 as the 40 is a more effective fight stopper than a 9mm. If a 40 is too stout, then get the 9mm G26. Not only are Glocks very simple to operate, they work, period. The stainless care 9mm and 40s are also excellent and highly concealable handguns with a very smooth DAO trigger. Okay, again, I'm sorry for the bathroom sounds. I don't know if you can hear, like, all the water running and toilets refilling and all that, but instead of boring you to death with, like, what guns you should get, not that it's boring, but I think that's the kind of research that you could probably do on your own. I want to talk about this section here that my friend pointed out to me. It's called Get Ugly with a Rapist. Okay, I'm getting out of the bathroom. It's too freaking loud. Hold on. In her excellent book, Armed and Female, Paxton Quigley visited California State Penitentiary at San Quentin to interview convicted rapists for their thoughts on armed women. One insight seemed particularly useful. Dennis Raymond advises a woman to use foul language when she confronts an assailant.
These guys are all used to hearing bad talk. We've been talking bad all our lives. We don't know any other way to talk. So if they don't hear bad talk, they don't understand, and you got to yell it. We have been yelled at all our lives, too. Cops, mothers, jail guards, and tough guys are all yell. You got to yell if you are pointing a gun at someone. He'll listen. What Raymond was describing was the language and culture of the criminal world. Foul language is their language. You are on their streets where they practice their culture. So you've got to speak, i.e. yell, their language. And this is just a quick thing here. I think that's why I have such foul language, because I had to be tough and rough to live where I did in New York City for 5 years. So I was, you know, I was smoking cigarettes. I had my nose pierced with like a big ring, you know, like I dropped the F-bomb. Still to this day, I'm trying to get out of that, but it's more like a defense mechanism for me, because we're constantly under attack. Now it's better, a little bit better where I am, but in the city, I was on foot everywhere. So I didn't have a car to like run over people with or like escape with. I was on foot and unarmed. So I just had to kind of, no one ever taught me self-defense. No one ever really taught me, or even told me like you should not live in these neighborhoods. I mean, I guess they did, but they couldn't really do anything. My parents, as I was an adult. So I think that's why I use such foul language. I think that I learned that as a defense mechanism, and I'm really trying to pull back on that because I don't like it. I mean, it's not necessary. It might feel good sometimes. I mean, I still use it. It's usually when I'm really angry, like where the filter's just gone, but I am actively working on that. It's very funny to hear Charles working on it too. I feel I can empathize with his struggle in trying to get rid of the swearing, but it's a very valiant effort. Okay, so your assailant is from another country. You know, they're saying that in quotes. Basically, they're like from another planet. So you have to think like them. They think differently than you. What's important to you, life, family, etc., is not important to him or her. I mean, these days it could be either or. He is more vicious and ruthless than you can ever imagine. To get through to him, you must get angry and loud and nasty in his own lingua franca. That he will understand. So at least I've got that one checked off. Check. Foul mouth, yelling, got it. Okay. Guys, it comes in handy sometimes, okay? I'm just saying. There's a balance. First of all, a very loud and forceful get the fuck back makes yourself clearly understood by speaking the native tongue. Secondly, it takes command of the situation by your not acting like a victim, which is naturally expected of you. Even this is just me really quickly. I remember my mom took like a self-defense course, and she was saying that there are certain hairstyles that they go for. I think they usually look for women that have ponytails because they can easily like rip them down, you know, like take their ponytail and like pull them by the ponytail to get them down. So, you know, just look into some of these things. Even my mom was telling me that they advised to yell fire instead of help. I know that's really sad, but since we have the bystander effect phenomena, if you've looked into that, where everybody assumes that another person has called 911 or helped, when you hear help, people think, oh, someone will take care of it. You know, someone closer than me. I'm sure someone out there heard that. They called the cops. But when you hear fire, you're like, oh shit, is my house on fire? I better go outside and investigate because fire equals bad. Okay. So we're almost done here, guys. We've got a few more minutes to fill, and I hope this show has been somewhat enjoyable for you. It was very much thrown together. I had actually some recordings from a few weeks ago that I never got a chance to air, so I hope I didn't repeat anything, but, you know, bear with me. I'm on the road. Okay. Now, although demanding verbal compliance is taught by many gun schools, incorporating profanity is not, and that's a mistake. I teach it in my classes as I believe in training students with as much realism as possible. I think that's great. This is me. I think that's wonderful. Like, if I could actually blurt out some swears while I'm shooting or, like, get in that situation, I think I would, think I'd be able to throw down. Okay. You do not, oh, I'm sorry. A rapist will not accost you with, oh, miss, I do regret the inconvenience, but I need a few minutes of your time in that alley, else I'll inflict pain on you.
I like this author. You do not calmly draw your gun and reply, "That is totally unacceptable, and I refuse. Be on your way, or I'll shoot." Yeah, no, that's not how it goes down. Sorry, guys. It's not as quaint and cute as that. It's like, motherfucker, I'm going to fucking kill you. Just an example. I'm just giving an example. It's educational swearing, so I'm okay. I can get away with it because that was educational. Okay. What you do in a training is what you'll do in real life, and I try to give my students every possible edge. Yelling and screaming profanity is part of it. If the fear and anger of an attack are not approximated in class, then you are training under a different emotional state than you will feel on the street, and it will cause you some dissonance if you're ever assaulted. It's a nasty scene, and you've got to get the nasty right back. Yes, I realize that ladies and gentlemen do not use such language and that you are uncomfortable doing so, but your life is worth yelling something coarse. When a female student just isn't getting into a forceful verbal compliance aspect of the course, whispering in her ear something like, do what I say, bitch, or I'll cut you bad, usually gets her attention. I think that's great. This guy sounds like an awesome teacher. I want to take a class by him. I can't, wow. I think I have like an excess of angry energy, and I can share it with you. Some of, you know, if you ladies have a hard time saying things like that, I have an abundance. I don't want it. Maybe take some, please take my angriness. Okay. Actually, instant and defeating out. Oh, sorry. Wow. Tired. Actually, instant and deafening outrage can be more effective than a weapon. Carrying a gun by itself does not assure you of surviving an attack. You must also exude raw will and savagery, which is often more terrifying than the weapon itself. Think about that, guys. I mean, just the psychological warfare that our folk used to engage in. You know, the Celts going butt naked and running against their opponents. That scared the crap out of the enemy. I mean, can you imagine a bunch of butt-naked Celtic guys just running at you down a hill? They don't even care. They don't give an F. They're like, let's do this. It works. It really does. You gotta carry yourself well on the streets, too. You know, like, don't look down on the ground. Look at people in the eyes, or especially, you know, like, potential threats. Look, keep your head up. You know, they're like, they smell out fear. Seriously, if you're like a little bit fearful, they're like, oh, that one, get that one. They're weak. It's true. It's a sad world that we have to live in. You know, it creates a very hard exterior. All right. So you must also exude raw will. We went through that. You cannot defend if you're in flight. You know, so if you're in the fight or flight, you can't defend yourself. In order to summon your courage, you have to get mad. And dredging up some really nasty language will help. Profanity is the language of anger. Express it. Civility and gentility during a lethal emergency will put you in the grave. If you want to wash your mouth out with soap later, that's fine. At least you'll be alive to do so. So I'm going to stop here. I think we've reached 2 hours. This is a great book. I hope to read more from it in the future. And I thank every one of you for listening tonight.